Good morning. The purpose of our hearing today, of our briefing, is to find out about the activities of the airlines to improve coordination between the tourism and aviation sector. What synergies are there? What are we doing together to improve what we are doing? What is happening? Is the government creating an environment that is conducive to better tourism? If so, what exactly is it doing? If not, what are the hindrances? Do you think that the regulations that are out there from the Department of Transport are hindering whatever you are doing? Or perhaps there could be something that is better that could be done, given the fact that the President has said that tourism is one of the primary sectors for purposes of job creation. And if you look at the new growth path and the programs of government, that is EPAP 2, you find that tourism is up there to as a priority. Now, from where we are, we would like to see the country getting its acts together, optimizing opportunities, optimizing the growth of the tourism industry, and in fact optimizing growth in the economy of the country. But given the fact that we are in tourism, we are going to limit ourselves mainly to tourism. And without much ado, I understand that you are having time constraints. It is not our intention to keep you here, but our intention is just to be satisfied that we are doing what we can in order to deliver, say, our potential market in neighboring countries, in other countries to South Africa, so that we have optimum tourism growth. So we shall ask our esteemed guests to introduce themselves, and then without much ado, get into business. Thank you very much. Let us start with FAA, Umama Umzimela, then we go to Air Link, Yebu Baba Foster, to introduce. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Susan Zimela, and I'm here representing South African Airways. And I'm also with George Mutema. George Mutema is the head of stakeholder relations within SAA. Thank you.
Honourable Chairman, thank you very much indeed for having us here today, you and your portfolio committee. My name is Roger Foster, and I'm representing South African Airlink, Pty Limited, commonly known nowadays known as Airlink. And together with me, my colleague, Noni Mashika, and between the two of us, later on during our opportunity to present to you, we will both be interacting in that presentation. Thank you very much indeed for the invite, and we are honoured and privileged to be here today. Thank you.
So before that, let us give a warm welcome to Umama Uzigalala and express once more our deepest sympathies as a committee on her bereavement. But any type of support, Umama Uzigalala, you require, we shall be with you. Any type of support, Umama. Thank you. Offered to you. In fact, for those that are not aware, she lost her husband about 2 months ago. Yes. Thank you. Mama Umsimi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And I should say thank you also for allowing us to present first, because we did indicate that we have a bit of a time constraint today. So thank you very much, I mean, for taking that into consideration. We have actually prepared a presentation, and I believe, I mean, the copies are being handed around as I speak. But what we thought, I mean, we'd do first, on our first slide, is really just to make a very strong statement that we believe that all of SAA's businesses strongly support the tourism sector. And I talk about all of SAA's businesses because sometimes people, when they think about SAA, they only think of SAA, the passenger side of the business, and forget that, I mean, SAA is actually a group of companies where within that portfolio we also have a low-cost carrier called Mango, and obviously a cargo division that helps, I mean, to support the passenger side of the business and also assisting us in trying to promote trade between the various countries which we fly to today. We also have SAA Technical, which is our maintenance wing of our business, which doesn't only provide services, I mean, to SAA, but also provides services to other airlines, both domestically and regionally as well. And we have our in-flight catering subsidiary called AirChef. AirChef, again, I mean, today supports in the region of 24 clients or 24 airlines who fly in and out of South Africa. So they don't only provide services, I mean, to SAA, but to a much broader group of airlines as well. And lastly as well, I mean, we also have the SAA Travel Center, which sells the SAA destination travel products. Again, I mean, trying to assist SAA, especially when we look at our leisure markets and how we can promote growth or support in that regard. I think as SAA, just to also make the point that we're very clear about our mandate and the strategic objectives that we hold as a state-owned entity, which includes us trying to develop new routes and enabling tourism and creating employment in the economy. So in everything that we put together in terms of our corporate plan, we never lose sight of that and the need for us to also support tourism and the broader South African economy. We believe that we're already playing quite a major role in promoting tourism in South Africa. And we just wanted to make the point upfront that, you know, sometimes when people look at an airline or look at SAA, they look only in terms of, I mean, the direct jobs that are created by SAA on its own. But that when you look at airlines actually contribute beyond just for the people that they employ in their own environment. And airlines typically have a direct impact on activities, and it's either direct, indirect, or induced, I mean, impacts in the economy. What we're talking about here is that the direct impacts are a lot more obvious, which is the number of passengers, the number of people that we hire in the airline. But because of airlines, even airport infrastructures can develop further, and we can also have, I mean, airport retail that supports the whole aviation industry. But we also provide, I mean, support indirectly, which is to the car rental services, to hotels, and to the ground support entities and the core operators by bringing those passengers into the country. And we believe that there are also induced impacts, which is from the consumption or the investment that's generated by those who are directly or indirectly benefiting from aviation activity. So we believe, I mean, that we actually impact, I mean, the economy beyond just looking at the pure numbers that are generated by SAA. In that respect, what we'd like to actually show, I mean, is a study that was actually done by Oxford Economics recently, which actually valued the aviation tourism sectorial contribution. Because it's always been a very difficult one to say how do you actually measure, you know, the direct and the indirect impact of aviation. And they've just recently concluded a study. And in that study, what came out of that is that if you look at aviation and the aviation catalytic effect on tourism in South Africa, aviation can be said to have created $23 billion contribution to GDP. in addition to the 50.9 billion in other sectors. And that aviation in totality would also have created 160,000 tourism jobs in addition to the 227 that are created in other sectors. If we then try and use the very concepts that they use to actually determine these numbers, we then said, how do we then, as SAA, try to estimate what our contribution would be using, I mean, the very same formulas or the same analysis that has been applied to try and determine what is the contribution of aviation as a whole. And we said SAA today carries approximately 50% of the inbound passengers to South Africa. So if we use that, we basically then would be responsible for having created 11.7 billion to the GDP contribution and supported in the region of 58,000 jobs. And I hope, I mean, there's understanding with that, because we're basically saying we may employ 10,000 people within the SAA system today, but when we look in terms of what other jobs we created indirectly as well, we're saying that using this formula, that was as a result of an independent study from Oxford Economics, we believe that we have actually been responsible in terms of contributing and supporting in the region of 58,000 jobs in the South African economy. What then, I mean, would be our role, I mean, going into the future? We understand that in order, I mean, to continue to support tourism into South Africa, we need to find a way to continuously grow our business and grow our business by bringing additional passengers into the country. And just basing on some of the passenger forecast growth that we have, I mean, in our system, which actually includes both SAA and Mango, and that's why I made the point of just highlighting that we would be looking at it from a group perspective in totality and as our contribution, that we're looking for a 37% growth to the end of March 2011. And on the cargo side, our growth forecasts are in the region of 19.5% for the same period. And we believe that this will help to improve or increase SAA's tourism sector GDP contribution and job creation with direct job creation targets within what SAA has already agreed, I mean, with DPE. What then are some of the challenges? Because we have all of these plans, but we do have to actually also acknowledge or address, I mean, some of the challenges that we face in trying to deliver on some of these numbers or trying to continue to provide the type of passenger numbers that we've been providing to date. And I think one of the key challenges that anyone in aviation today will highlight is just really that what we're basically seeing is that there's been a very slow recovery from the global meltdown, and that's having, I mean, a serious, I mean, and continues to have a serious impact on us. Because the propensity, I mean, to travel, we realize, normally tracks, I mean, GDP growth. And what we're seeing is that the global demand growth rates have not yet recovered to the GFC levels. And therefore, the leisure travel in particular is very slow to recover, I mean, from that. And the numbers that we're seeing, I mean, coming through are not even at the levels that they were at prior to the global financial crisis. And in addition to that, what you also find is that, in addition, I mean, to the low the low growth rates in some of these markets, we also find that ourselves having to deal with issues such as the Japanese, I mean, earthquake that we experienced and the volcanic ash clouds, because when all of these things happen, they have a direct impact on the number of passengers, I mean, that we're able, I mean, to carry, because they have an impact on the number of people, I mean, that either coming to our country or that were able to fly, I mean, from South Africa as well. So this is an area of huge concern to us, that, I mean, we continue to monitor the economy and just to try and see what will be the, and hopefully we are hoping that in the medium to long term that we'll begin to see some recovery in that environment. But over and above that, the aviation industry is also faced with the higher fuel costs, which are highly volatile. The Brent price moved from USD 100 per barrel in January, and it peaked at USD 126, I mean, in April. Now, fuel has a direct impact on what we can actually do as an airline, because it immediately increases the cost of operation. In the past, fuel used to account for less than 30% of our costs. Today, fuel is close to 40% of our cost, and it has an even bigger impact on our international routes. Less so on domestic and regional, but a much bigger impact on the international routes, which this is a target that, or this is a target market that we obviously would be trying to focus on to bring tourism into the country. But you find that it becomes quite difficult to be able to do so at the levels of cost that we need to carry. And because fuel is also priced in USD, you find that airlines are not only just managing the price of fuel, but we're also having to watch the exchange rate as well. And so when the rand dollar goes up and down, it also has an impact in terms of what we're able to carry. And I think the big thing is that it's a bigger cost, I mean, for the airline. But in addition, just for airlines to be able to continue to operate some of these services, you would find that we need to try and find ways to recover this. And the way you recover it is that it ends up being a higher price, I mean, to the passenger, because now we are increasing, I mean, a fuel levies. So it ends up really being a vicious circle, so to speak, in trying to address some of these challenges. But there are also challenges which are local challenges, or local as in South African, I mean, challenges that we are faced with, I mean, today. And one of the key ones that as SAA we've continuously, I mean, highlighted in the last couple of months is really the transit visas and the impact that it has on our passenger numbers. We have seen a decline of up to 20% in some of the African markets to South Africa as a result of the transit visas, because now people are using other carriers such as Kenya Airways and Ethiopian Airlines to go directly to places like Botswana and so forth, and they're no longer coming through South Africa or hubbing through South Africa because there's no requirement, I mean, for transit visas from those countries. But we are insisting on the transit visas, and it does have a very negative impact on us. And we also wanted to highlight the fact that we definitely need to find a way of dealing with the baggage theft at our airports, because it is another factor. Especially when it comes to traders and so forth, who would normally fly through South Africa to go to the Far East and so forth, you'd find that now they're actually using other alternatives, such as the Kenya Airways and Ethiopians, because they tend to be a lot more reliable in being able to transport their goods, or people being assured that they can arrive home with their goods. This is going to be a key focus area for us as an airline, because at the end of the day, I think we've probably spent a lot of time trying to point fingers at each other as to where the problem lies, as opposed to really just saying, how do we now begin to deal with this issue decisively. And as SAA, we have just recently initiated a project focused especially on OAS Tambo. We've brought in some of our people who sit in our international stations who have a greater expertise in managing this area to say, can they just come and assist on a project basis for us to understand a little bit better where the problems are at OAS Tambo, I mean, specifically. And then, you know, we continue to find ourselves incurring even higher costs. And I do need to mention that, you know, the high airport charges do have a negative impact on us as airlines. And I think that there is something a little bit strange about the method that is utilized, I mean, in South Africa, because I think in other developed markets, you know, or airport models would utilize a concept where you negotiate with the airlines upfront in terms of what they require from an infrastructure perspective. And I think that's an area of challenge, I mean, for us, because we end up with infrastructure that we need to pay for, but it's not really, I mean, something that we would have been in a position, if we had been part of the discussion, we probably would have highlighted that we're not quite ready for the full infrastructure, because it's going to have a negative impact on us. So when we look at airport charges and the fact that they're projected to increase in the region of about 129% from 2010 to 2015, it really creates a bit of a challenge, I mean, for us, because those airport charges ultimately need to be recovered, and they end up being recovered via higher fares as well. The last and the important, I mean, not the last challenge, but I mean, for me, one of the really key challenges, I mean, for SAA right now is just also the excessive capacity that's being allowed to foreign carriers into South Africa. And I'm just going to show an example a little bit later in terms of what we're talking about here, because I think that in the past there's always been a view that's held that SAA is always looking to be protected. I don't think SAA is looking to be protected in any way. And SAA is very clear that we understand that we operate in a highly competitive environment, and we are up to the game in terms of being able to pick up, I mean, the challenge of the competition. But it's also understanding the type of people that we're allowing additional access into our markets, and understanding that it's not on the same basis as somebody that you are competing with on a point-to-point, I mean, basis. We're not competing with people where we're increasing capacity from people's home markets or to come to South Africa. So it's not an original destination, I mean, requirement that we're increasing for. But we're increasing to carriers, I mean, that are actually pursuing a different type of model, which is to try and grow their home markets as the hub area. And we're allowing all of them additional capacity to come and pick up passengers in South Africa to create the home market as the preferred hub. And I don't know whether we quite understand this and what the implications are on this, because more and more people then use those hubs a lot more. If you look in terms of what we should be doing as airlines, I mean, together, within the understanding that we have to be creating jobs in the tourism area, I think our model has always been, how do we try and make sure, even in South African areas, if you look even in terms of the continent, we've tried to make sure that we provide as much frequency, as many connections, so that everybody sees Johannesburg, you know, as the hub to come through, or South Africa as the best way to actually connect through to go to another country. Now we're allowing other carriers to come in with as much capacity into South Africa to do exactly that in their home markets. I don't believe, I mean, that we actually quite understand what we're doing and the damage that we have, not only the airline only, but also, I mean, on the economy overall. Because what we're basically doing is that we're promoting those hubs to be preferred hubs as opposed to the South African hub. And we would just want to point out, I mean, that this becomes a very, very big challenge for us. And I want to emphasize once again, it's not about SAA and trying to avoid competing with other carriers. We compete with carriers today. We compete with carriers that look for capacity from an origin and destination perspective on each of the routes that we operate. Those are not the carriers that we have a problem with, but we have a problem with the carriers that are trying to grow a new hub, I mean, in their hometowns. And when we look at other areas around the world, you see that, I mean, we seem to be the old ones out, so to speak, because if you just look at even so-called developed markets, they probably should be at the point where they're allowing a lot more people to come into their area with a lot of capacity. They have policies to try and control the capacity allocation in proportion to the rail demand. Okay? So if I'm saying I believe there's more demand between Johannesburg and Dubai, it had better be because the market between Johannesburg and Dubai is there. But don't come and ask for capacity, because not for Johannesburg and Dubai, but you're asking for capacity for Australia and everything else. I think there just needs to be a much better understanding in terms of what are the implications for South Africa on that. In all of that, we find ourselves sitting with a challenge where, whilst other markets are opening up in the rest of the world, the African markets are not opening as quickly as they should. I think, I mean, that is a fact. That we find that we're still challenged, I mean, in Africa, that the markets are not opening up, I mean, for other African carriers on the continent. Additionally, we see that, I mean, a new phenomenon in the aviation sector is that there's a lot more of consolidation between airlines at the moment following the global financial crisis. And we as SAA need to then understand what this is actually going to mean for us. In all of this, I think we also need to understand that we do have a particular disadvantage as SAA in terms of where we're located in the world. We describe airlines, or we tend to categorize, I mean, airlines by saying that either end of hemisphere, mid-hemisphere airlines, or end of hemisphere in terms of, I mean, the bottom. And as you see, I mean, from the graph, I mean, that you've actually put up, I mean, or the map that you've put up on the slide as well. And the point that needs to be made is that we're always going to be a disadvantage to somebody or a carrier that's sitting in the mid-hemisphere. And the advantages that they have as mid-hemisphere carriers is that the distance they have to travel to reach various points around the world is a much shorter distance. Okay. It's a much shorter distance, much quicker distance, which means they can also reach a lot of those countries with technologies that is not really up to the same level as we would require to start off from a much further point on the continent. We are a mid-hemisphere a carrier, which means it takes longer to go, I mean, from South Africa, obviously, to a lot of the places around the world. And it requires that the technology that we then have in order to do that is a lot more different. And a lot more different means it's a lot more expensive, and the cost of operations are a lot more expensive. So it isn't a disadvantage that we have, but we also believe that there are advantages. And those are some of the things that we're going to be trying to capitalize on. Because the advantage is that if you just look at that map of the world, is that anybody going from South America to the east, the best place, I mean, to hub would be South Africa. Because you know, that's the shortest distance, I mean, to get you, I mean, to that. It's the best connecting point as well, I mean, via South Africa, I mean, to India, via South Africa, even, I mean, to a lot of the eastern or Middle Eastern countries. And we are going to be trying to focus on that advantage in terms of growing and the number of frequency and understanding. I mean, that is a competitive advantage that we can benefit on in terms of trying to make sure that we can encourage people to hub through South Africa, because that's the shortest distance that we provide. Rather than then going to Europe to go to a lot of these destinations, we think we can sell the concept of them coming via South Africa to go to a lot of these destinations, even if the ultimate destination is not South Africa. I am going to use one example, and I just to try and emphasize the point that I had used previously, is that if we just look at one particular carrier and the growth, their five-year growth plan on the African continent, you will see that when we talk about this carrier, that in July of 2006, they had 13 destinations and they had 5,500 seats in on the continent. And then 5 years later, they have more than doubled, and the destinations are sitting at 22 destinations, and they have doubled the number of seats that they offer onto the continent. And I just thought that it was just important so that people actually understand and put this into context in terms of some of the issues that we continue to raise as a concern, that it's not just us speaking anecdotally about some of these things, that, I mean, this is actually quite real, and it is a problem, I mean, for us. So how do we see things, I mean, going forward? I think as SAA, we do seek to forge stronger links with SA Tourism. We believe that currently there is a lack of cohesion at a formal and practical level between the airline and SA Tourism. And we believe that we can both benefit from forging stronger links, especially because we're focused on the tourism sector and the contribution that we can provide in terms of our GDP contribution, the job and the jobs that can be created. And we think we can do this by probably structuring, I mean, joint working groups between SAA and SA Tourism. Now, we have actually started working on some of all of this. We are currently developing a three-year strategy and an annual working plan for all of our markets, where we're basically trying to encourage that each of our regional general managers that are located either in Europe, Asia, South America, or other Americas, that they have a much more close and working relationship with SA Tourism. And that we think that we can then jointly, I mean, benefit from that. Especially when we're trying, because we're both trying to promote the country. SA Tourism's focus is promoting the country as a preferred destination from a tourism perspective. It's totally aligned to what SAA is also trying to do, which is to promote the country. Because if we promote the country, we all stand to benefit in terms of the passengers that we can carry or to bring, I mean, to South Africa. And this will include, you know, things like joint marketing campaigns as well, where instead of each one of us utilizing funds in a different at a different time and with a different focus, that we can coordinate our efforts a lot more better. We think that we can get a lot more for the value from pooling some of our resources. I mean, in this regard, we have gone as far as to even say that where SAA is actually represented around the world, if SA Tourism requires some space to actually share with us in that office, we are more than willing, I mean, to be able to cater for that, I mean, as well. But we're looking at that as a case-to-case, I mean, basis, and there are areas where SA Tourism is quite keen to talk to us about that type of proposal. Because we really, at the end of the day, have to be one team, and it's team South Africa, and not SAA, SA Tourism, but really view ourselves as Team South Africa in promoting our country and tourism. I would really like to stop here then and take questions.
Thanks very much, and let me also thank the presenter. Unfortunately, you know, when you talk about this issue of the South African Air, there are things that you don't understand. Of course, we are dealing with tourism directly. So there are a lot of things that is in my mind, but they are pertaining to the SAES as an entity. But my question, I wanted to base my question on two things. The president talked about the currency going up and down, and it affects the, I'm sorry, it affects the tourism, but it's not clear. I just want some clarity and emphasis on that, especially the higher rate on airport charges. Because I'm saying this because most of, I've made my own study. I'm aware that most of the people domestic, they are now changing their minds. They are using BA better than SAA. Most of the people are using BA, and that worries me because I believe SAA is our product, just South Africans, and white people are now chasing you away. Maybe it is, you just explain a little more about it. Certainly, this challenge of this other countries putting their airline here. The president talked about this challenge. Because I'm aware also that many airlines are landing in OR International. And I'm not sure what role they play in terms of tourism on our side as South Africa. Because we have to get some benefit out of that. The last one. The last one is this one of the slides number 13. This question of the network. How are you going to use this network on your advantage? Because you said there are some advantages that you can use, but just clarify how are you going to use them? These advantages, because they can put you in a better position. Lastly, Chair. I'm not sure, maybe the president will explain better. I'm not sure SAA promotes tourism. I don't want to say 100%, but to the satisfaction of us as people, because we fly almost every week. And in terms of tourism activities in the bigger airports like OR Tambo and Cape Town, that we are using it as members of parliament, I'm not sure. The tourism is so highlighted to the SAA. And maybe we can just look at the reason why tourism, because I'm sure even those countries that are flying to South Africa, tourism must play a major role, because tourism is about the hospitality of the country. And if you get into the airport and you don't see anything that makes you attractive to the hospitality of this particular country, South Africa, I'm not sure we are promoting tourism very well in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kumo.
Thanks, Chair. I think we have received an honest and illuminating presentation, although I actually find it quite depressing. I'd like to pick up two issues. The one is about the baggage theft. I don't think it's ever been put quite as worryingly as it has been put today. It says baggage theft remains very high. That's bad enough. And then it says an OR Tambo International is out of control. Out of control. That's a very, very serious state of affairs. And what worries me is that 2 years ago, or even longer, we had a senior manager of SAA here, as well as AXA. And they explained to us that baggage theft at ORT was double international international standards, or frequencies, perhaps is a better word. And it was explained to us that every time staff are taken on to handle the baggage, 25% are dishonest, half are corruptible, and only 25% actually can't be corrupted. And within 6 months, the 25% have corrupted the 50%, and then 75% of the staff are dishonest, and then every 6 months they have to replace the staff. That's actually what they testified to us. Now, I mean, you know, I'm not in a position to verify or to disclaim that. I mean, that's just what we were told as a committee. And we pointed out at the time that that was actually causing great damage to our brand amongst tourists are concerned, and we had a couple of very embarrassing situations where sporting teams overseas came here and the entire kit was stolen. And we were told it would get better, particularly because we were leading up to 2010. And now I say we hear it is out of control. And I have to actually ask, why has it taken so long to get on top of this problem? And it's not even as if we're not getting on top of the problem. It would appear it's getting worse. Because we weren't told 2 years ago that the situation was out of control. We were told that various things were happening to get it right. But in fact, it's still not right. And I don't know how we can really take our drive as a committee and as a country to promote this country overseas. We're the first experience that the majority of inbound tourists are going to get is that they have a baggage theft situation that is out of control. So I mean, I just think it is extremely concerning that it would appear it's taken years and years and years to actually let the situation get worse. It's not as if we're dealing with poaching in a game reserve which covers hundreds of thousands of hectares. We're talking about a confined urban space. And I can't understand why we can't have CCTV cameras and a bank of those and people watching and monitoring every single person from the time the luggage is delivered at departures, taken off that little conveyor belt into the packing section and then onto the plane. It just seems incredible that a place the size of ORT can't actually track what happens to your luggage. Now we have a situation where if you want your luggage to be relatively safe, you've got to have it wrapped, and that costs you 50 rand. I mean, yeah, you wrap three suitcases, it costs you 150 rand. Why? Because you can't trust our own staff. There's something very wrong here, Chair, and I really think SA has a lot of answer for that they come here 2 years later and tell us that the situation is now out of control. The first impression tourists get. The second thing that I'm battling to understand is this thing about we, in fact, are suffering because we're liberalizing the airways. And we're told that, and I try to follow the presentation, we're told that other airlines are using our space to promote their own hubs. It appears to me that what we've been told is that other countries are trying to bring in inbound tourists, and because we've liberalized our skies, it is easier for them now to bring people from South Africa to their countries. I may have misunderstood, but that's how the presentation seemed to go. The question I've got to ask myself is, why is it that we can't compete? Why can't we compete with Germany or Spain or any other major long-haul destination and actually bring people or take people to their countries as cheaply as they can? I mean, the difference is the same with whether you're coming or going. It doesn't seem to make sense to me because we're in an end-of-hemisphere location. We can't travel to Frankfurt Airport at the same cost as a Lufthansa jet can travel to Frankfurt Airport from ORT. Now, if we're talking about that, then that's the one issue. But then what about planes coming into South Africa? People also have to come here. And we know from our tourist statistics that 75% of our tourists are from Africa, and they tend to be many people from Zimbabwe, Swaziland, more from Angola and Kenya these days, but generally don't spend huge amounts of money. And our big ticket spending tourists actually come from long-haul destinations. And the tourist industry at the moment is in a lot of trouble. Everyone is saying that the bookings are down, we haven't received the benefits we should have, and the growth in tourists is actually not from people who are spending a lot of money, hence the low hotel bookings and the struggling industry. Now, if we can't compete with these overseas long-haul carriers and can't bring in people cheaply, then again, we're losing out as a country. And surely our mandate as a committee is not to say, how do we save South Africa? How do we save South African Airways? But how do we actually save the country in terms of boosting tourism? Quite frankly, if other long-haul destination airline carriers can bring in people cheaper than SA, then those are the people we have to go with, because it doesn't seem to make any difference whether they come in on SAA or Sabina or British Airways. But we need the tourists here. And as far as I'm concerned, as long as we can bring more tourists here, surely it's irrelevant what airline they come on, because we need tourists here. And what I don't understand is how SAA cannot compete with long-haul destinations from other countries, and while other airlines seem to be able to bring people cheaper to our country than we can. I mean, surely we must have inbuilt advantages that we can exploit. And why is it that we are so worried and so concerned about an open skies policy, and why that's a threat to us, when in fact it should be an opportunity? So those are my questions, Chair, and you know, unfortunately the questions don't seem to have answers, and we're hearing the same thing happening year after year after year. The situation seems to be getting worse rather than better. And if SAA can't compete, I have to ask, why are the taxpayers subsidizing it? If British Airways can bring people from Britain spending their pounds in South Africa, or people from Europe spending their euros in this country, which is what we need, if those airlines can do better, then maybe they should be allowed to do that. Because actually keeping people away by protecting SA Airways is not helping the country.
Okay. No, thank you. Let us ask questions that can be answered. The rhetorical ones, let us just short it down. Over to you, Mama Njobe, and then Mama Opa Mokwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I said earlier before the meeting started, I would like to congratulate the lady for having been promoted from, I can't remember the position, but I travel by SA Express, so I usually read her comments, and as I say, her face does not appear there anymore, because she has been promoted. However, I still read the article. On page 2, where the presenter speaks of SAA being very clear about its mandate and the strategic objectives, and this includes new route development. That's the point I want to refer to, new route development. But I'm thinking of local routes. We've just been on the tour of the Northwest, the Committee on Tourism, and one of the concerns that has been raised there from area to area, we visited about 4 or 5 areas there, but in each one of them, there was this common concern that although the Northwest has got quite a lot of tourist attractions, but they are not able to get, the area is not that easily accessible because they do not have an airport. So when you're talking about opening new routes, in my opinion, we should not only think about international destinations, but also within the country itself, and to make some of these areas more accessible to tourists. It was actually the same thing with Kimberley, but I think Kimberley were complaining more about, the Northern Cape, they were complaining more about international flights not landing in Kimberley, because they feel that if international flights were to land there also, they would be able to get more tourists, because they do have tourist attraction. But I think this point about the Northwest needs to be looked into by SAA. Now, also on page 4, you talk about creating jobs. You talk about having, you think you have created 58,000 jobs, but you don't tell us the period during which these jobs could have been created. Is it job created in 1 year, there is job created over a period of time. That is of interest to me because we are faced here with a challenge. This country has committed itself this year to creating over 1 million. I mean, 5 million? So we do want to know actually how many jobs do get created. Now the question of the effect of the economic uncertainty on SAA, I do wish we had quantified the impact which this has had on SAA. It's one thing to say, yes, it has had an impact, but I think we are better informed if, for instance, this is quantified. I think in our case, as a Committee of Tourism, it could have been quantified in terms of the features of the number of passengers that come in into the country. As for the question of the bus, of the test of baggage, I think Mr. the Honourable Kumbo has said enough, but I must say, you know, if one has to go through Johannesburg Airport, we really do get concerned because we find that even small items like new slippers that I had bought for myself when we were going to another tour. I needed slippers, so I bought them on the way, quickly put them in a pocket on the side, and when I got to the destination, there were no slippers. Oh, really? I mean, I don't know how it is with people who actually lose very, very valuable items, particularly our international Jews. I think I agree with Mr. Grunford that really we must do something about this. The cameras are there. The modern technology is there to detect all these things. So why can't we do it in South Africa? Because for sure it does make people fear coming through Johannesburg if they know that by the time they get back home, they will not have everything. This last, they're also very careless, I must say. This last time, for instance, I found my suitcase. By the time I got home, my suitcase didn't have a handle. But I've traveled with this suitcase between East London and here, and there's never been any problem. But just passing through once in Johannesburg, the handle is gone. There's something wrong there. I think whoever is responsible, they must really take the responsibility. I travel a lot between East London and here, and I've never lost a thing for the last 16, 17 years. But Joburg, his glasses, his slippers, his whatever.
Yes.
Now, on the question of the competition with other carriers, particularly those carriers that are using South Africa in order to make them their own areas, their hub of activities, travel activities. But you are not telling us about what efforts you as SAA are making in order to tackle this problem. And also, I would want to know, when you say other carriers are allowed, but my question is by whom? Who is allowing them to come into South Africa to the disadvantage of the South African Airways? I think we need to look into that. Who is doing it to the disadvantage, or rather, how is it happening that now it disadvantages the South African Airways? And with regard to the link with the South African tourism, yes, I think one would appreciate that, but my concern would be, what has been the response of the South African tourism to your thinking, or has it been proposed practically? Has there been any strategy formed? You're saying you are thinking of forming a South Africa, a team South Africa. Has this happened, or is it still on the way? Or what exactly are the practicalities of this proposal? And the Emirates has been very successful, according to your presentation. As we look at the reasons why the Emirates has become so successful in a short period of time, 5 years' time, and what examples can you copy from that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. I think FAA has got the best aircraft. I think FAA has got the best aircraft, that is the aircraft size and structures. The most modern, the thing aircraft. The problem perhaps could be hospitality and those things.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleagues have addressed the bulk of the questions I would have targeted at FAA under the flagship of Mrs. Nzimela. Jobs, tourism and jobs. The quantification, yes, Mama Jobi has talked about that. I would like to know exactly what kind of jobs they are creating, because I'm not very clear about that. The second thing, I would go actually for the soft issues, because the major things have been tackled. And I want to emphasize that we are interested mostly in FAA emphasizing domestic tourism, FAA embarking on a strong strategy to market the destinations. I know that is FAA tourism's job, but if the aircraft or the flights are so expensive, it becomes very prohibitive to travel, because FAA is actually one of the most expensive airlines you can ever come across. Now, the soft issues. I would like to know what kind of training their staff gets, because staff at FAA, they are crude, they are nonchalant, they are not responsive, and they treat especially members of parliament very shabbily. And they are very abrupt, they are not helpful, we are just fodder, that you just throw things in. And you become very, very concerned. You say, if these people are chewing me like this, what do they do to our visitors? And I would like them to really concentrate on staff training, because staff is what shows, it's our mirror to our international community. The second thing is, she's talking about cargo. It looks like Air Link has expanded its belly space to accommodate cargo. Do they have a problem? Coming again to soft issues, I want to find out if it is, first of all, what is their relationship with SAA Link, and what is their relationship with ACSA? Because some of the things I may ask about may perhaps pertain to ACSA, or they may pertain to Air Link. I don't know what the relationships are.
No, it is independent. They only lead as far as Voyager is concerned.
Okay. If I shoot a question which apparently belongs to ACSA, then I will humbly bend down. We often are delayed at disembarkation. There never is, in fact, more often than not, you find that we don't dock on time, we do not, because some of us have got to connect on international flights, but we find that we lose our flights, we miss our flights, because the aircraft has no parking space, no bay has been allocated yet. You wait there for almost 15, 20 minutes, waiting for direction. We don't disembark timelessly. Secondly, we find that there are no staircases for us to use, because some firm of some sort
has not approved of a certain contract. Now you let your passengers see how shabbily administration is running. The other thing, you find that even in the bus, there is very little that, you know, things don't work out. Secondly, particularly when you come to Cape Town. In Cape Town, there is no respect for disabled passengers. Even in Joburg, you find that the staff that is supposed to take care of the disabled, it comes again back to soft issues. When you find that there is a passenger that needs attention, there is a lot of talk around who's going to do it. If nobody knows or it is nobody's job, you are just being done a favor as a disabled person. When you get to Cape Town, you are shoved into that ugly bus, which looks like a truck that carries carcasses from the slaughterhouse into the butchery shop. That is the way that thing is built. It is not user friendly. It's ugly. It's not comfortable. It really is a demeaning means of transport. You come as a first class passenger, and you are degraded to even below a live pig, to the status of a dead pig. That is how we are treated at FAA. You find that when you get to Cape Town, there is no one who wants to come and pick you up in a wheelchair because the people don't know who is supposed to pick you up. FAA say no, so-and-so says no to FAA. So nobody wants to take responsibility. You find little old ladies standing there crutching on their poor old husbands as well and not knowing what to do because there is no one to take care of them. It is very, very embarrassing. It is very inhuman, and I wish we could put human hearts into FAA staff, especially the stewardesses and the ground staff. We find a lot of humiliation, especially the disabled. There's no help. No help. You're on your own, black man, if you are struggling in FAA. And yet, the reason why, actually, to answer Mr. Honorable Farai's question about why British Airways is getting more passengers, is because we're treated shabbily in FAA. There is no recognition at all of you as a passenger, and there's no recognition of you as an MP. There used to be, particularly in Cape Town, a check-in desk dedicated to parliamentarians. I don't know whose duty that is. But when you go there, you are rushing to get into the next meeting or to get another flight. But you find that there is nothing. You have got to queue up. Not that I hate queues, yes I do, but some consideration has got to be made at some stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. I think it's we have gone beyond our time for meeting, but for this session. But let us just in about 10 minutes try to get a response. But I think except if you are going to be very, very short. Please, I mean, we can't understand.
Many things have already been covered. All I wanted to ask, who signed the agreement for international flights to fly to South Africa? Because it seems as a challenge. Also, the challenge of FAA's high prices of flights, is there no way that can be done? Because even people from South Africa, when they are going to these overseas trips, they always query that, no, we are taking other flights because SAA is very high. Is there nothing that can be done for that adjustment? And you understand that the real fuel is coming up. It affects even us, people that are traveling, the ground transport, we are very affected about it. So I think that we need to do something to improve the way of the charges that we're charging our passengers, really. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. I'll try and cover all of the questions that were raised in the thing.
When we lost something in SAA, you need to improve in that. You will remind them of your replacement until you just forget about it. That is the challenge.
Mom, if you want to just shortly, please.
One other thing, there is a lot of competition going on between South African Airways and British Airways. And I become so jealous, Chairperson, because South African Airways, I believe it's our company, you know. The services have totally, completely changed, you know. I don't know why. The services that are rendered to passengers in the flight. Why? Where did it go wrong? Because I remember when I started flying, coming to Parliament, 2004, the standard was fine. It was super. Huh? It has just changed drastically. Chairperson. Mzimele ufuna nini ibheke kwenziwa yini manje nishone phansi ukuthi makunje impela abantu bathi nje British, for instance, Chairperson, the Devonites, they are using British Airways. Do you think they feel they must go back to South African Airways? I don't want to mention names anyway. Because the services and the rest has been said. But we are very proud of you, of South African Airways, and isidlakela ngithi, that is what we believe. So let's try and improve. Thank you.
As I said, I was just trying to respond, I mean, in the order in which the questions were actually raised. I think the first question was around, I mean, currency. The reason why I talked about currency and the currency movements is that it obviously would have an impact on the cost of hotels if you just think about it. And that if you're sitting in Britain, looking at the exchange rate overnight, depending on movements in currency, the hotel could be costing you at least 15% to 20%. I mean, higher than one you would have initially intended to come through. The same obviously would apply. I mean, to airfares, and then from an airline perspective, depending on the movement of the currency, it also could result in higher costs for us, because a lot of the things that we pay for are priced in US dollars as an airline. And then I think you raised the question of British Airways taking passengers from SAA. You know, to be honest with you, I mean, this continues, I mean, to be raised that British Airways is taking passengers from SAA. One is that SAA understands that it actually operates in a highly competitive market. It's one of the few SOEs that actually operates in a competitive environment. And therefore, I mean, we must expect that there are instances where we are going to lose, I mean, passengers to other airlines. But equally, we also gain from other airlines. So I tend to look at numbers, you know, as opposed to sometimes the perception that may be created that we may be losing passengers, because the reality is a totally different story to sometimes some of the perceptions that may be out there. But we understand we're in a competitive environment. So you'd find that, for argument's sake, if we're not on a route with the right frequency, of course we're not going to be the first choice, because people would look at that and say, who gives me the highest number of connections to the destination that I want to, and they will choose that carrier as opposed to us. But it's not a reflection of saying, you know, SAA is actually losing passengers, you know, to British Airways. I think British Airways, as we said right now, would be worried about SAA, because I think we hold our own. I'm serious about that. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I think there was a question about other carriers and the issue that was raised around, and I think I did try to possibly try and describe it, and maybe it didn't come across quite clearly. I've made a very strong point that, you know, there's always been a perception, when we raise some of the issues relating to the amount of capacity that's being brought into South Africa, people automatically assume that it's about SAA wanting to be protected. SAA has no problem with competition. So when we talk about competing with people like Lufthansa out of Germany, with British Airways out of the UK, with Qantas out of Australia, we don't have a problem with that. We know that we're operating in a competitive environment. So therefore, we must expect that those people are bringing passengers into our environment. But that's competition, which is point to point, based on the size of the market. So you would look at the size of the market and say the size of the market between the UK and South Africa is this big. So between all of the carriers that operate on that leg, they would have been operating on the basis of understanding this is the size of the market. So we compete and understand that we're competing on the same grounds, I mean, so to speak. What I was highlighting was not those carriers. Please, I just want to be specific. I was not highlighting that. I was not in any way saying, Lufthansa from coming in, stop British Airways from getting more capacity, stop everybody else from coming to. Not at all. I tried to separate the fact that there is that competition which we understand, which is normal competition. But there's also competition from what we call six freedom carriers, which is a different type of competition. And that's the one that I was actually trying to highlight and saying that's very different to actually competing with somebody on a point-to-point. And understanding that when those carriers come into our market, it's because they're pursuing a particular strategy. Rightfully so, because it's all about trying to make sure that they grow their hubs and drive people to come to their country for tourism. I was highlighting it in the context of South Africa, but not in the context of SAA only, to say, as we allow additional capacity in that form, we must understand what the implications are, that there's somebody else who's actually trying to pursue a similar strategy and therefore understand that it may have implications for us, not for South African areas. Of course, we're the only international carrier that, unfortunately, when we raise these things, you know, there's an automatic assumption that it's about protecting SAA. I try to separate that. That is not about SAA. I'm talking about the country when I then talk about those additional frequencies. I do also want to make the point that we showed in our presentation that despite all of the capacity that's been provided on all of the international markets, SAA is still responsible for 50% of the international arrivals to South Africa today. This is despite us having open markets and allowing Africa, we are still responsible for 50%. And that's not an indication that because we're responsible for 50% because we've been given more capacity. There's more than enough that's out there that's currently not utilized on the point-to-point markets. There was a question about us being a network carrier and the disadvantage and how we're going to try and capitalize on the advantages that we see. And I think that I responded by that to say the advantages that we see is somewhat, if you look at the previous map that we put up there, to say when you look at traffic from South America going to the east, to India and all of those places, that's our competitive advantage because we can be able to sell South Africa as a destination that provides you with the quickest connections and the shortest connections if you go that way. So what does that mean from South African Airways? That means we have to increase frequency so that there's enough frequency coming from South Africa via South Africa, South America, via South Africa to go to the east. So that people then look at us as a better choice than going via Europe. Because I talked about that. At the end of the day, even if we're strategically located and we have that competitive environment, if we're not providing the right frequency, people are still going to go via Europe. So our response has been to increase frequency, which is why we've increased the frequency substantially to places like Sao Paulo to actually, capitalize on those advantages, that we have. I wrote in short now, I can't even see some of my own webbing. As I told, maybe let me then deal with the baggage issue. I think that I would hate, first of all, that's honest language from our side, but maybe let me say honest language in what form? I think as South African Airways, the reason why we would highlight OR Tambo as being a much bigger problem for South African Airways versus any other person who flies us is because we have so much capacity that's actually allocated to OR Tambo. So we feel it more, and we feel it more than any other carrier that would actually operate out of ORT. So it has a huge impact on us. That's why we view it as actually a big problem for South African Airways. We're not saying OR Tambo is so bad. Possibly if we spoke to other carriers that only have one or two frequencies into OR Tambo, they have a different experience. than we would have the South African Airways. But because all of our flights, if not, well, I mean, probably 90% of our international flights are out of our tempo, we feel the pain a lot more when things go wrong. And on this one here, the problem, or part of the reasons why we probably haven't been able to resolve it, is because we're always pointing fingers at each other. It's not our problem, because I can sit here and tell you it's not our problem. We believe that we've done everything that we need to do. It's somebody else. It's AXA, okay? You speak to AXA. AXA will tell you, we've put in the cameras. There's everything. So it's not our problem. It's the ground handlers. It's because there's so many parties that are involved in that baggage chain, such that it is important for us that when we deal with this problem, we deal with it collectively and not be looking to say, it's not my problem because I've done what I need to do. And ultimately, as an airline, we feel it more. Because if you are a passenger and you lose your bag, you don't say it's AXA who lost your bag. You don't say it's Swissport who lost your bag. You say it's SAA. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of these comments, and to be honest, I could actually defend SAA, but it's got nothing to do with SAA because it's not us. But I understand that when you're a passenger, at that point, I mean, you don't care to actually try and understand is it AXA, is it Swissport, and so forth, because this is the experience that you're having, having bought a ticket on SAA. So that's the approach that we're basically saying, understanding that the problem may not lie with us, but it becomes our problem, because at the end of the day, the perception that's created is that it's SAA that's at fault, and we need to actually address that. Part of the things that were said, I mean, previously, I mean, were very true and very valid, because this continues to be an ongoing problem. But just like, I think, the previous team that you mentioned talked about the people that get hired and how they get corrupt in a very short space of time, I think that during the World Cup, for example, we're able to demonstrate we hardly lost any bags, if any. I don't know, I mean, Roger, if anything, if any. But because at that time there was, like, focus from everybody, and there was also additional security that was allocated to the baggage value chain at that point in time. But you know what normally happens? You focus on it, and then everybody forgets because, I mean, there's a particular event that's passed. It's one of those where we continuously look into probably outsmart some of the individuals that are operating in that environment. I look at it and I say, you know, possibly it's like IT. You know, they say IT, you have a new system, it's redundant after 6 months. I think whatever system that we put in, especially around the baggage issues at the airport, require us to continuously review the system. Because we put them in and they work, and they work for the first couple of months. But you find that after a few months, people have been smart enough to find ways to overcome some of the initiatives that have been put in. So we have to continuously do that. I think I have already spoken about the opening of markets and what context that actually raised some of those issues. But maybe just one important thing is that I'm pretty sure that SA Tourism can confirm this, but the African tourists actually do spend far more money in South Africa than a lot of the international carriers. They may stay here shorter, but per night, in terms of what they spend much more money. And I think SA Tourism can actually confirm those numbers because they have, I mean, the data. Then there was a question around SAA's mandate and new route development. When I was talking about new route development, I have to be honest that what we're talking about is opening 7 new destinations into Africa. And then we have one additional destination, which is to Beijing, which we're opening at the end of October as well. So in terms of the local market, there's nothing, I mean, that we've planned on our side. What we normally do is look at increasing frequency. But at the same time, that's why SAA has an alliance relationship with SAA Link and SAA Express, because normally they would operate to the smaller markets. But the airports are not the airlines. So there has to be an airport for us, I mean, to even operate, and there has to be, I mean, volume. The airports don't belong, you know, to AXA. And then there was a question around, I mean, the numbers. When I talked about the 58,000 jobs, by the way, I said created and supported. So it's not as if there's completely new jobs of the 58,000. We'll just try and find a way of breaking it down. But supported and created, 58,000. And we're talking for a period of really a year in terms of saying this is the number of jobs, I mean, that we actually supported. Linked with SA Tourism, I think that the response from SA Tourism has been very positive, and we can actually point to one or two examples now where the relationship between us and SA Tourism is working very well, the one being Germany and the second, I mean, being the UK. And there is already, I mean, a much closer working relationship that has been created there. I think there was also a question about what types of jobs are being created. The jobs are being created in the airline. The jobs are being created at the airports. the dogs are being created at hotels, because the more people we bring, the more people, obviously hotels have to hire, I mean, more people. The dogs will be created with the car rental company, for argument's sake. And so that's the value chain that we're talking about in terms of the type of jobs that get created. The domestic tourism, you know, I think that from an airline perspective, the way in which you support domestic tourism is to ensure that you have enough frequency going to this. I think this is where, again, we talk about a joint initiative between ourselves and SA Tourism, because the actual promotion of trying to get our people to fly more, I mean, domestically for tourism reasons, has to be a joint effort from our side. How we then support that initiative is to make sure that there are enough flights to, for people to be able, I mean, to do that. And I think we do play a role, I mean, in that respect. In terms of our staff members, you know, I don't want to be defensive about it, and I don't want me to be protecting my people. I think as SAA we acknowledge the fact that we have challenges, and we still have challenges, which is why we're trying to address all of those challenges by increasing the amount of training that we give to our staff. But I think that we've also seen some very positive, you know, remarks and a turnaround in the last couple of months. As well on this, where from our perspective, the way we judge it is that number of complaints and number of compliments. And we've really seen a change in that. There's a lot more compliments than there are actually complaints around in our staff. That's not to say that anything is perfect. I accept them fully that, and we know for a fact that it is a very key area for us to focus on, which is just to make sure that we continue to train. I think the challenge that we face is not so much that we hold a whole group of people that are bad and that are rude, but sometimes it's just a consistency in service. And that you find that there are 20 good people, and all of a sudden there are 5 people who are not that good. And sometimes they're the ones, I mean, who have a much more greater negative impact on the overall. But it is a challenge, I mean, that we are actually working on and that we fully acknowledge. But I think would be doing this service to the employees of SAA if I did not say, I think SAA is also made up of a great number of people that are quite passionate about their job and serving the customer. We will remain, I mean, with those changes and we continue actually to train. I wasn't too sure about the question relating to cargo and the belly space, but from SAA side, what we do is that we do carry cargo in the belly space of our aircraft, but additionally, we also have freighters, which are just dedicated cargo carriers. So I don't know if it was, I didn't quite understand the question on cargo and belly space and the increase of belly space, but maybe that was a question for Eric. Again, on some of the, how we handle the disabled, I mean, passengers, I think, I mean, it is an area that we need to improve on in terms of training our people on how to handle disabled, I mean, passengers generally. I'm not going to argue about that. Again, it depends on the individual on that particular day. But the bus that you're talking about has got absolutely nothing to do with SAA. That PAU. It's not SAA. Again, it's the same situation that as a passenger, you see it as SAA, but it's not SAA. It's not an SAA vehicle at all. It's, you know, I mean, so it's SAA who then is seen as providing transport which is not fit for humans, but it's actually not an FAA vehicle. But I understand that, you know, when you're a passenger, all you see is FAA and you bought them from FAA. There is work that needs to be done by ourselves, by AXA, by everybody else, in understanding that we all have an impact on the way in which we're perceived, you know, by the customers and everybody else, I mean, in the environment. But let me just say that, I mean, I have taken some of your comments into consideration. But it is very clear sometimes, I mean, to me, that the biggest challenge that we have as SAA is just to be able for people to see that. I don't think it's going to help, because it's never going to happen, to see the separation of where SAA starts and ends and where somebody else takes over. So I guess it relates back to exactly the example I used on baggage, to say as a result of that, it clearly is not helping us to say it's not our problem, it's not us. We clearly have to, you know, to be a lot more proactive in trying to find some of these solutions, because at the end of the day, people perceive it, I mean, to be SAA. I think the last one was around, I mean, SAA and being very expensive. I'm going to ask Roger when he presents to talk about pricing, because I think that so far in everything that I've responded to, I may have come across as some kind of defensive, but I think it would be good just to hear from another airline in terms of what our views are from a pricing perspective, because I would argue quite strongly as well that we have a full range of fares. We are not a low-cost carrier. So we're also very clear about that, because if we started to get confused and wanted to start to charge fares that are the same as Kulula, then the question would be, why do we have Mango? SAA has Mango, and Mango is a low-cost carrier. So we're not going to compete with Kulula because we don't have the same cost. We don't operate in the same fashion in any way. So we don't want to compete. We really shouldn't be in the same space as that. No, I accept that. So that's the one area. But in terms of the others, we have a full range of fares. And depending on availability, you'd find that you do find fares that are competitive with other people, and that days where the flights are full, and yes, you're going to find them in the more expensive fares. But as I said, I think this one is so sensitive to a lot of people that I'll probably just ask somebody who's not an SAA person to possibly talk about fares and how we view fares in the airline industry. Otherwise, I will be come across as quite defensive. But thank you for asking.
Where do flights belong? Do they belong to Assam?
What's that? Essex?
Essex.
Oh, Essex belongs to us. To SAA.
Wow.
Yes. I'm sure you'd have seen the new menus. I thought somebody was going to comment about the new menus and the new meals on SAA. But they didn't come through. It started in May. We introduced, new menus. We are receiving very positive feedback on those menus as well.
Thank you very
much. Yes.
Okay. Let's just reflect now. In fact, we have just totally gone beyond our time. I'm very sorry. All your questions are important, but at the same time, we've got 2 minutes now.
It's not a question, Chair. It's
yes.
A compliment.
Yes.
After all we've said, negative and all, we seem to be bashing. But one compliment is that SAA, they provide the safest flights. That is a compliment. Your flights are very safe.
Thank you, man. I think one has got to thank the commercial aviation industry in South Africa, really. We have had an incident-free distinct travel for a very, very long time. And given the fact that the SAA has a larger share, thank you to SAA as well in that. But South Africa, compared to other destinations, really is safe in terms of this thing. Commercial airlines, and we've got to acknowledge that. But to all other distinct airlines, including SAA, but given the fact that SAA is the major player, I think really we thank SAA for that. The issues of control, like package theft and so forth, issues of control. I think, but it is. They don't lie with the SAA as such, but it's airport. If you go to O.R. Tambo, and O.R. Tambo, people from Eguru Lane will tell you, is not in Johannesburg. they emphasize that, if you remember when we went for our oversight visit, they kept on saying it's Eguru Lane. We have that problem, but I think it's a control issue. Because sometimes you get told that people from Cape Town are going to collect their luggage in Carousel 4, and then all of a sudden you find your baggage in Carousel 2. And no one explains, no one is overseeing that, no one is supervising at O.R. Tambo at the Carousel. You want to ask questions from someone, there is no one. I think it's part of management. It's a management witness at AXA, if we had to have to pinpoint, because we travel all the time. It looks like it's a major problem, but the weakness is in management of AXA. The same as with the baggage. Baggage preference, we have been raising this issue for a long time, but AXA capacity to manage. I don't think it's something more than that, because nothing happens to anybody, even if it's negligent. That is where the problem comes, because you have never heard that there has been a change of staff or whatever from AXA. There are no consequences if you are negligent. There are no consequences if things are lost and so forth. So, but it's not SAE, but now because it's part of this seamless travel, then people get the problems. But the issue of the hubs, I think we'll have to continue engaging and see what how to improve, given the situation that the stakeholders already are engaging in trying to work together. That is forming the joint working group with FA Tourism, but I think they are working together with AXA and other role players as well to try and improve the perception of our destination, because that is what it is all about at the end of the day, the hospitality of South Africa as a destination. And it only takes just one negligent partner and everyone suffers, including the economy of our country. Having said that, but thank you very much. At least there is something you are doing. Just expand on what you are doing, and let us make sure everyone in South Africa works for a better South Africa, as South Africa that is working optimally. We have seen that we are capable of that. We have done that in the World Cup. Let us now invest those capacities, those resources we did, that spirit that we did during the World Cup, and make it to be ongoing. We are going to be champions. But the problems that we have identified for SAE, some of them are lie with SAE, but the majority of them are not solely with SAE. They could be with other role players as well. With those words, I don't know whether the CEO of SAE would like to have concluding remarks before we close.
No, thank you very much, Amin Shea. And just to say that, look, I appreciate the comments that were actually made. And just to confirm that we don't take it lightly, because I would say that you need to understand when people are so passionate about highlighting weaknesses in the SAA system, it's because they care about it. And that's the way in which, I mean, we would actually view the comments that have been made. And that it's not completely negative, even though, I mean, sometimes it comes across as if it is, but we understand in what context it's being made. It's really just aimed at trying to ensure that we continuously improve. And we commit to that. But I suspect, I mean, there are a number of members that haven't flown with us lately. Can I urge that you fly with us? Try and fly with us, and I would love to hear what your experiences will be. Mama, try, not Kimberly only. Try somewhere.
At the end of the day,
I fly SAA.
Okay.
All the time.
Okay, sure. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's how you fight these perceptions. It's our duty to convey whatever we see and what people say. We've got to be direct and straightforward. But the intention, please, is not malice. We want to create the strongest, a strong South Africa, and we want to make it as strong as it could be. Sometimes it could be language, but it's not the intention to downplay your efforts. You are trying, but we want to definitely to see other things improving in what we are trying to do, in order for us to have a South Africa that works, a South Africa that performs, a South Africa that is perceived as great. Thanks.
Okay, can I just again, I mean, tender my apologies, maybe to other members, not understanding why we would be leaving right now. But unfortunately, there is another commitment to Johannesburg. We would have loved to stay a little bit longer and to support our alliance partner, A-Link, but I'm sure they will do okay. So we really want to apologize. It's not to be rude.
Okay, well, thank you. Let us go for tea for 10 minutes and then come back. Let us get ready 1 minute more. And your team, we are very proud to have you here. So it's your turn. Please feel free.
Thank you, Chairman. And as I indicated earlier on, it's a privilege for us to be here. Thank you very much for your very kind invitation. We have traveled from Johannesburg this morning, myself and my colleague, Donnie Mashika. And obviously, we're going to leave a lot of time for questions because it seems that that's really the main purpose. So I have done a presentation, and I'd like to take the committee and you, Chair, through that. I've put a program together of what we're going to discuss. I'm going to tell you a little bit about A-Link, give you an introduction, talk about our network, our fleet of aircraft. I've got a few pictures of where we come from, where we live, our headquarters, in other words, just to give you an idea of who we are. But the main purpose of being here today is to talk about three items that you've given us in terms of your invitation for us to attend. And it starts off with our participation in tourism growth from an inclusive perspective. So we're going to talk about tourism partnerships, we're going to talk about customer equity, we're going to talk about punctuality performance, which we consider is the foremost element of service delivery when it comes to customer satisfaction. We're going to talk about capacity growth. We're going to talk about passenger volume growth over the history of at least the last 10 years. We're going to talk about fare reduction against increased input costs as a matter of fact. We're going to talk about employment creation as the second agenda item. We're going to talk about challenges facing the aviation sector in terms of the impediments to an airline trying to develop and grow itself in the interests of the propagation of tourism. About Airlink. Airlink is not a new business. We were established in 1992. But our roots go back to earlier beginnings than 1992. In fact, the business was built on the base of one of the businesses that Airlink acquired through its development. That business is a business called Midlands Aviation, which is now SA Airlink Pty Limited. There was a buyout and a reverse takeover. And that business had its roots back to 1967. So Airlink has been around participating in South Africa in the air services sector since that date. We're a private company. Private, in the context, we have two institutional investors, one of which is a company called Coronation Capital. One is Nedbank. South African Airways is a shareholder in Airlink. It's a 3% shareholder in Airlink. And then there are two private individuals, both of whom were the founding members. I happen to be one of them. They were really the management component of the business previously. I remain in the management role, and my original business partner has subsequently retired and gone fishing in his holiday home in St. Francis, and he earned that in his life, so well done to him, and long may that last. We joined South African Airways by way of a franchisee in 1997, and Chairman, we're not just a member of Voyager. In fact, we participate holistically as a franchisee, which means we use a lot of South African Airways intellectual property, in particular the invisible electronic intellectual property that is associated with the global distribution booking system. We set that up specifically in terms of accessing our points, our destinations, and making them available to be co-joined with SAA flights, for example, from Frankfurt, to come through the hub Johannesburg, and then to go on to a destination such as Ndola, or Madagascar, or Mpumalanga, or wherever. We operate a fleet of 29 aeroplanes. These vary in size. We have our entry-level gauge as a 29-seater. It's a turbo-propeller aircraft. And our large-gauge regional aircraft is an 85-seater, and we operate these aircraft on different routes according to the right size deployment of gauge to market, and I'll give a depiction of those aircraft in a minute. We operate 16 domestic routes, and I'll show you what the route network looks like a little later, and 13 regional routes, and that constitutes collectively 29 routes that we operate. We have a turnover of about 1.4 billion per annum. We have just under a million passengers per annum that we fly on the Airlink network. The company has assets, net assets valued at approximately R250 million. We have a staff complement of 900 employees. Now, dealing with the route network, I would like to highlight that our interpretation of tourism isn't someone necessarily going away on holiday. Tourism is much broader than that. Tourism is about visitors, whether on business or on holiday or going home to visit family or coming from home to your point of work, it's complex. It's about tourists, and in our instance, especially business tourists, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on, visiting destinations not only domestically or within the home market within South Africa, and that's obviously an imperative, but it goes beyond that. It goes also in terms of bringing tourists through South Africa, hopefully to stop in South Africa, and then to go on to some other key destinations. If we have a look at Airlink's network, it is a unique network insofar as we do not share most of our network with other carriers. We have competition on many of our routes, but there are some routes which are exclusively operated by Airlink, mainly because they are thin in terms of traffic volumes and accordingly don't really have the propensity to accept or accommodate competition. Airlink's business is approximately 70% business travel, 30% being either visiting friends and relatives or leisure makers, people going away on holiday. And if we take a look at our route network specifically, we focus and have done so historically on picking up smaller community centres, typically that have aspirations or inclinations to develop from an economic perspective, but specifically about industrial development. And the interesting thing about business tourism is that to get to a destination like Tet, you ideally need to go through a hub like Johannesburg. And whereas we tie our flight frequencies and our capacities to make connections with those of South African Airways in terms of our franchise relationship with them, we also encourage our passengers through marketing mechanisms, our in-flight magazine, to be enticed to visit interesting tourism destinations within South Africa for their typical R&R, their in-between times. I talk about places like Tet, but I'd like to just spend a little bit of time talking about the typical destinations that we operate in Dola, for example. The purpose is the Copper Belt, and it's a huge industrial establishment. Expats from all over the world have established themselves in Dola, and they send their children to schools in places like Grahamstown or in Johannesburg, and they go and they visit their children on weekends, or the children go and visit them on weekends. And so that becomes an element of tourism. And the same with a place like Lusaka, which is, as we know, the capital of Zambia. In the case of Bulawayo, we've got mining activity and agri-tourism. Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe. Pemba, in Mozambique, we've got expats throughout the world busy with gas and oil exploration. And not exploration in the context of let's see if we can find it. They have found it. The question is exploration as to whether it is commercially viable. And you know, on the one hand, oil at over $100 a barrel becomes problematic for all transport service providers, not just airlines, to make sense of the input operational economics. The flip side of that is that it does create opportunity for oil down the southwest coast of Namibia, northwest coast of South Africa, and places like Mozambique, Pemba, and Madagascar, the northwest coast of Madagascar, to develop industrial centres, which in turn has a spin-off for people to send their children to school in Grahamstown or Pietermaritzburg or wherever, and visit South Africa and our game parks and so on. Same with Tet. Tet is blessed with huge coking coal deposits, the biggest on Earth, and at the moment it is being flooded with expats that are coming in from Brazil, from Australia, from you name it, and establishing themselves in huge mining enterprises to explore the coking coal deposits and ship them to China, to Brazil, to wherever. Nampula, big agricultural establishment, but It is the city next to the Port Nacala, which is a huge deep water port. And the coking coal that is coming from Tet will ultimately find its way through Nacala. Nacala is developing a rail link to the port, which will be shipping coal, a rail link from Tet through to Nacala. And at the same time, there is also a rail link that is going from Tet through to Beira. Beira in itself is an industrial development node. It is the port to the Beira corridor, which links central Zimbabwe and Zambia to the coast and to give them access to shipping. I've spoken a fair amount about a lot of over-border opportunities. You'll note on our route network that we also provide the services to Manzini in Swaziland, and Chair and the committee. I must say that that is something that Airlink is particularly proud of. We're in a partnership with the state. The Kingdom of Swaziland is our partner, and we provide the air services to Manzini. And we know that obviously Swaziland has its difficulties economically, but I think so too does a lot of other countries in the rest of the world. We're also the only service provider to Maseru and Lesotho. Very difficult destination to provide services to, because those of the forum that would know Maseru and Lesotho and its locality, it is located within high terrain, and it has the tendency to attract poor weather. And even with the best instrument facilities, navigational aids on the ground, it presents operational challenges. And many of our destinations do that. We provide services to Pietermaritzburg, also a difficult destination to service. And I think if you take a look at our network in terms of the domestic arrangements, we have places like Upington, which is not an industrial, it's an agriculturally developing area, but it also has a propensity to attract tourism because there are national parks in that area, there's the Farbies Falls in that area, and so on. We'll obviously take questions about everything a little bit later. I'd like to talk very briefly about our fleet of aircraft. We operate 29 aircraft, as I've indicated. The split of those aircraft is we have 13 of the entry-level product, that's the turbopropeller, of which we have 9 currently operating in scheduled services. We have 2 as the maintenance, the reserve aircraft, and as the backup aircraft. And we have 2 that are currently being converted into freighters, one of which is, in fact, converted into a freighter. One of the committee members earlier on asked questions about freight, and I would like to spend a minute or two later on in the presentation talking about freight and freighter opportunities specifically. We have 8 Embraer 135 regional jets. That was the photograph that we saw on the cover page of the presentation, 7 of which are in daily scheduled activity. We have 1 aircraft as the backup and maintenance aircraft. We have 8 Avro regional jets. These are in Europe known as the Whisper Jet. These are the latest generation of those. We have 6 in scheduled service, and we have 2 in backup support maintenance role. So of the 29 airplanes, we have 22 that are in scheduled service all the time, 5 as backup maintenance aircraft in order to ensure dispatch reliability and punctuality performance, and we have 2 aircraft currently in the process of being converted into freighters. That's what the entry-level product looks like, the Jetstream. It's a 29-seater. It is operated by a pilot and a co-pilot. It has 1 cabin attendant on board. It is really meant to operate to local destinations with a payload range of approximately 500 or 600 nautical miles. It starts getting a bit uncomfortable when you go above 1.5 hours of flying time in that aircraft. That is typically the aircraft that Airlink ultimately will operate as a freighter aircraft. We've indicated earlier on that we've got 2 of those aircraft already. One is converted, one is in the process of being converted. Ultimately, the aircraft, this particular one, will be switched out for jet aircraft, and all of these aircraft will become freighters, and we will have a dedicated freight network that concentrates on express parcels. And perhaps I could just talk at this point as to why we are doing that. Typically, throughout our network of 29 destinations, we also carry freight in the bellies of our aircraft. Belly freight is typically express parcels. I know we're here to talk about tourism, but I thought let me just answer the question that was raised earlier on. Our passengers are growing organically at approximately 7% per annum. And as they grow, we find that the aircraft capacity to also having growing freight volumes declines because the one competes with the other. Aircraft operate on the basis of payload limitations and sometimes capacity in terms of volume capacity limitations. So as the passenger volume increases, so too does their hold baggage. And as that grows, the capacity for freight declines, as does the payload capacity for freight decline. And we find very often to places like Beira, as an example, where we've got express parcels that have been booked onto our flights, suddenly we can't take them because the plane fills up with passengers and then we don't have any capacity for the freight. And obviously moving freight around is also an essential element of the air transportation systems, and that's the reason why we've decided to commit these aircraft in the long term to dedicated express parcel freighters. That's the Embraer Regional Jet. It operates to a range of approximately 1,600 nautical miles, and that includes every destination within the Airlink network that you saw on our network map. It carries 37 passengers. It's a high-performance aircraft. It flies fast. And we've had great success with that aircraft. As I indicated earlier on, we have 8 of those aircraft. And then this is the Avro Regional Jet. There is an earlier variant of it. We don't operate the earlier variant. We used to, but we don't anymore. This is, as I indicated, a Whisper Jet. It is quite fuel efficient, not the most fuel efficient aircraft around, but then it also has some unique capabilities. It can operate in relatively short airfield environments. Typically, London City is an airfield that this aircraft has addressed very successfully historically, Lugano in Switzerland as well. And there is a potential to operate this particular aircraft in very interesting destinations within South Africa. For example, Tshwane City's airport, one of them. For example, Grand Central Airport in Midrand, which in itself has a potential to stimulate tourism because it happens to be within the best catchment within at the heart of Gauteng, but also specifically on a freeway system with three nodes of that freeway system and also on the Gautrain transportation system. It has Grand Central, I'm talking about specifically, has a Gautrain station within 500 meters of the airport. So that's the potential of this aircraft. This aircraft operates on routes like Madagascar, Antananarivo. It's very safe with the four engines flying across the ocean. It operates to Ndola, to Bulawayo, to Harare, to Saka, domestically between Cape Town and Nelspruit, Johannesburg and Nelspruit, and we operate the aircraft also on the Pietermaritzburg sector. That's Airlink's head office. It's based at Greenstone Hill in Johannesburg. And typically, we try and convey ourselves as a professional, not too cold, but a professional, well-structured organization, which we believe we are. We're here to discuss inclusive tourism growth, and I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Noni.
Thanks, Roger. Chair, as an entity, Airlink is of the understanding that without a destination, we wouldn't exist, and equally so, without air access, any destination would not be able to flourish. Hence why we took the initiative almost over 2 to 3 years ago to form strategic partnerships with South African tourism and the tourism industry as a whole. And that partnership, we understand that as an airline, we need to obviously, as an important part of the value chain of tourism, we needed to obviously form these partnerships to ensure that we identify the synergies that exist between ourselves as the aviation industry and the tourism industry. Some of the tourism partnerships that we have actually put into place between ourselves and the tourism industry is the National Department of Tourism, SA Tourism as a whole, And because we operate locally into local destinations, we have put together partnerships with provincial tourism authorities or parastatals within those particular provinces to ensure that we continue to communicate our own strategy within those particular regions. What we also did was to comment on the national tourism staff strategy, which has most recently been launched. We actually did an entire analysis on the strategy, and we looked at the important pillars that impacted on us as an aviation industry and how we could align our entire strategy with that particular tourism pillar and ensure that it aligned itself with our entire strategy as an airline. And what we've also done in terms of operational level tourism, at operational level, we've put together partnerships or working groups where, for instance, with short-lived, where we saw that in terms of growth for short-lived as a program of SA Tourism, we launched things such as special fares into certain destinations to stimulate travel in those markets domestically, because not only do we need international travelers to travel within the country, but we also need the local market to also travel within the country. So that particular partnership with SA Tourism is in place and has been put into place. And we've also invested in destination-specific marketing, whereby we take the destinations that we operate to and we market those particular destinations specifically and individually. Because as I said earlier, without the destination marketed efficiently, we as airlines therefore lose out on the volumes that are supposed to be going into those particular destinations. And equally so, we have worked together with tour operators to put together packages. And these tour operators are listed under tourism entities. And, by offering fares that allow the tour operator to put together not only the airfare arrangements but also the land arrangements and the ground activities to stimulate travel to those particular areas. And these partnerships are flourishing as we speak, and we continue to work very, very closely with tourism authorities on at the operational level, and we meet with them at monthly intervals. And and that's basically what we've done in terms of tourism. Destinations such as Nelspruit to Mpumalanga, investment in tourism for over the past 20 years that we've worked with the local authorities. We've been flying into Mpumalanga since the early 1990s, and we've managed to invest in that market and ensure that it grows. And that's evident in the different gauge of aircraft that we've offered. For instance, ensuring that the frequencies are in place for international connections for passengers that are flying in at different times of the day to be able to connect to their destinations. And this despite some of the challenges that we've experienced within that particular market, such as the subsidized competition on that particular route, and which we find is a very, very huge challenge. And I think Roger can speak further about that in some of the challenges that we face as the aviation industry.
Yeah. Thanks, Bonnie. Just on that, perhaps I can just highlight that for 20 years we've built frequency and capacity, and we've grown passenger volumes on a route like Nelspruit, and it's not the only one. I mean, that's typically what we do. We go and we develop markets, and I used the example earlier on of a market like Tech. A year ago exactly, there was no service between Johannesburg and Tech. Today, there's 2,000 passengers a month moving on the route Johannesburg-Tech, and that's what we've done in the case of Nelspruit. 20 years ago, there was probably less than 2,000 passengers a month moving on that route entirely. Today, the overall market that Air Link moves in and out of Nelspruit, Nelspruit-Johannesburg, Nelspruit, Durban-Nelspruit, Cape Town, 14,500 passengers that we move, and we have 75% share of all of the traffic that moves in and out of Nelspruit, and that's scheduled air service providers and non-scheduled air service providers combined. So one of the most important elements about what we do is we invest in customer equity. We heard lots of comments earlier on about attitudes of staff and about passengers being dissatisfied. We measure many key performance indicators within everything that we do in terms of service provision, one of which is we measure customer satisfaction, and we measure that by fielding the number of complaints. As a point of interest, if a complaint comes to the desk of the chief executive in Airlink, then I answer that complaint. We don't have people in the business, you know, running around doing the difficult job of answering complaints. I do that myself. If it comes to the company generally, we have a customer care center, and then the complaint gets fielded there. But if it is addressed to me, I answer it. And if I can't answer it, we've got a big problem in the company. In other words, if I can't address the number of complaints, we've got a big problem in the company. So we track complaints, and very pleasingly, especially in the last just over a year, 18 months, we've seen a downward trend in the number of complaints, indicating that our customer satisfaction seems to be improving. We also measure, as I say, many things, but one of the key measurables is punctuality performance. Now, I don't expect everybody to go into the fine brush detail of the graph. I would just ask you to look at the curve right on top of the graph, and you'll notice that typically Airlink's punctuality performance, on-time performance, is around 90%. And it gets better from month to month. And if one takes the weather delays into account and delays that are out of Airlink's control, then it is quite extraordinarily good. We don't only measure internally, but we also tap the AXA system. AXA, if you have a look on AXA's website nowadays, AXA publishes on-time performance of all airlines. And this is where I'm not here representing South African Airways, and I don't want to be out of turn by flying SAA's flag, but being an alliance partner, perhaps I can highlight that the three most punctual airlines, all AXA airports included, and that takes into account also weather delays, are SAA, Mango, and Airlink, and I'm very pleased that Airlink is in the top three. If one disregards weather, in other words, you excuse weather as being something that the airline itself cannot control, then Airlink is the number one punctual airline in the country. And it's not a coincidence that we are that, because we measure it, and we measure all the facets that contributed, as you can see on this graph, and we chip away until we get it better and better all the time. So we're very pleased that we're in the top three, including weather. And perhaps I can just pause a bit and talk about some of the destinations that we do provide services to, some of the very sensitive destinations. In Tata, for example, Tata is very close to the mountains, and it has a very old, archaic, in fact, obsolete or redundant NDB approach system, non-directional beacon approach system, that should have been replaced or upgraded many years ago. And it hasn't been upgraded, and we've really struggled, and I'll talk a bit more about this a bit later. We've struggled to get a decent instrument approach to go to Mthatha. We commonly, this is a perennial issue, have the beacon falling over, unserviceable, not working. And when the beacons don't work, you don't have a choice. If there is weather, cloud cover, you have to divert. You cannot take a chance by descending through the cloud, and we do not do that. Safety obviously being the imperative. It's not alone. We operate to Peter Maritzburg, to Matsapa, and to Lesotho, all of which are in terrain, mountainous terrain, and they all present very similar difficulties to Mthatha. So what we did is we pioneered in South Africa a global positioning system, approach system called GNSS. And in fact, if you have a look at the presentation pack that is available to everybody, there is an article on GNSS. And we managed to get the GNSS to be approved and certified by South African Civil Aviation for application in Pietermaritzburg. And we've been working with Pietermaritzburg GNSS since July last year. It took us nearly 2 years to implement GNSS in South Africa, which is very, very challenging. More about that a little bit later. We also have similar difficulties on Polokwane. Polokwane is a provincial capital. And Polokwane has an instrument landing system which the province invested in 4 years ago. And still today we may not use that instrument landing system because it hasn't been authorized for use, and it seems to be there is a spat between the Air Force and whose airspace it is that the instrument landing system of Polokwane would make use of. And from our perspective, we are constantly having flights diverted back from Polokwane every time there is no card. And that's just simply outrageous that in a first world organizational country like South Africa, we can't resolve simple issues like air navigation and make it first world. And that's one of the real issues that we have. But again, Chair, if I may, I'll talk about that a bit later. This is a curve. Impediments. I think it's more airspace, and airspace is NASCOM, and NASCOM is SANDF, and it's civil aviation. But unfortunately, there's one of those issues that goes around and around, and people pointing fingers, and it's not us, and it's not you, and whatever. But in the meantime, the scheduled air service to a place like Polokwane has to suffer, and you're constantly having diversions. Not because the airline likes diverting, because it costs the airline a lot of money every time there is a diversion, and that's bad for tourism. What we need is reliable navigation aids on the ground, and they are quite inexpensive and affordable. If someone can just simply say, so what does it take? That's what it is. Let's get the parties together. We're all interested as South Africans, and let's make it work. This is Air Link's growth in terms of passenger volumes and capacity, just to demonstrate that where we were, and the beginning of the curve is in 2002 January to where we are now, which is April 2011, and we've grown passenger volumes from approximately 50,000 to approximately 80,000 odd today, and we've grown capacity, because one has to first grow capacity before you grow passenger volumes, responsibly in line with capacity demand. Now, I just create that as a reference point, having a look at the passenger volume growth specifically as a reference point, because in this graph, the yellow curve is in fact the passenger volume growth. And what it shows is the price of fuel over the same period of time relative to passenger volume growth. And then what I've done is I've thrown into the mix what we've actually achieved in airfares achieved, what we call yield in the air transportation business, which is the green curve right at the bottom. Now, they're all indexed based off 100, which is off the left-hand side of the graph. And at base 100, very importantly, over the past almost 10 years, airfares have declined by 17%, where input costs have gone up almost three times. Input costs like fuel, for example, and infrastructure costs, AXA costs, AT&S costs, FSCAA costs, etc., all collectively have gone up threefold, but in the meantime, airfares, in real terms, have declined by 17%, 16.6% in fact. I think it's a function of competition, but it's also, Chairman, a function of the affordability of the travelling public. And Caesar said she'd like me to talk about airfares, and I didn't come prepared to talk about airfares, but I know it's going to be a hot topic because airfares are always a hot topic, so I can talk about airfares. I can talk about airfares in the context of this graph, but I can also talk about airfares in terms of how we benchmark our fares against what we call the global proxies. Not just the costs, the input costs, and there I would like to highlight that the cost of an aircraft in US dollars is the same whether you buy it in South Africa or in North America or in Europe. It costs the same. The cost of finance is different in South Africa in rand than it is in Europe. You can pick up finance in Europe at relatively low US dollar loans, low interest rate loans, and when you look at finance costs in South Africa in rand, cost of finance for an aircraft is probably 11 or 12% interest rate, so versus 2 or 3% in Europe. So straight away your ownership cost is significantly more expensive in South Africa. The cost of fuel has to be shipped because the product is not made locally. It has to be shipped from wherever its source is, from the refineries, in shipping finished product to Durban in the main, Cape Town here as well. But Durban in the main, there is some product that is refined, but the majority of Jet A1 fuel for aircraft is in fact shipped into the country. and then it gets transported by pipeline to Johannesburg or by road to Johannesburg. It gets put into huge reservoirs, and then it gets distributed and put into plane by an in-plane service provider at Alentejo or wherever. So the cost of transportation of fuel to put it into our aircraft in South Africa is significantly more than most of our counterparts around the world. And the cost of labor, you know, labor is mobile, especially your high-skilled laborers. And pilots, for example, aircraft technicians, they are sought after resources throughout the world. A lot of South African pilots find their way to places like Emirates or to Singapore, to Cathay Pacific or wherever. And so we have to retain them by staff retention strategies. And unless we can get to some semblance of pay parity, we're not going to retain our skills. So that's one of the facets of cost inputs in the composition of what our total operating costs are. But notwithstanding that, if we compare like-for-like fares, and we do that all the time, every single month we have a common basket, and we've been doing this for the last 20 years, we compare that common basket with our services, and it's defined by distance, you know, 150 to 250 nautical miles, 250 to 500, 500 to 750, 750 to 1,000 and above. Those are the categories that we define. And in all of those categories, Air Link fares, and I'm talking about the average achieved fare, not our published fare, the average achieved fare is less than one-third of the global benchmark, the average. We're less than one-third. And how we achieve that is by operational efficiency rather than by anything else. And the same applies to South African Airways. If you compare South African Airways fares, they're also approximately one-third of their global proxies. I recently had the experience, I had to attend a family wedding in Italy. I'm not Italian, but the family member was marrying an Italian, and I needed to attend. I didn't attend, unfortunately, but my wife represented my family. And off she went. I had business to attend to, so I missed the wedding. And I needed to fly her from Frankfurt to Florence. And I don't mind mentioning the airline, and it wasn't short notice. We planned for the wedding 3 months in advance. I needed to fly her from Frankfurt to Florence, and the return airfare on Lufthansa CityLine was 12,000 Rand economy class. 12,000 Rand. The distance, 735 kilometers. 735 kilometers. 12,000 Rand return. If I had to compare a 735-kilometer route in South Africa, like Johannesburg-Cuppington, typically what we would get would be far less than a third of that 12,000 rand. Now, I know there's a lot of sensitivity about airfare, and you know we have cheap fares. Our cheapest fare at the moment is 249 rand, but no airline can survive only on cheap fares. And what we have to do is find the balance between having no passengers at all at 12,000 Rand, we won't get a single South African to fly, or everybody flies at 249 Rand and the airline goes bust. So we have to find that happy balance where we can optimize our revenue so that we've got enough revenue to cover our operating costs that we can stay in business. And as a point of interest, you know, the net margins, and Air Link, we just about to finish our financial year for 2011, that finishes on the 31st of August this month, and we can fairly well predict exactly what our performance is going to be. Our net margin this year, positive, 1.8%. And we have a turnover in our business of approximately 1.4, 1.5 billion rands per annum. So when you take a look at the risk, the exposure that you have, not only from a financial and enterprise perspective, also as regards operational safety risk, it's very high for a 1.8% net margin. Employment creation. I'm very pleased to say that we've tracked employment over the last years. I haven't given you every single year, it's not necessary, but I've given you a spot check in 2001, 2004, 2007, and 2011. And as the Air Link business has grown almost exponentially, we've seen our staff complement. And I know in the relative scheme of things that, you know, when we talk about 900 employees at Air Link, it doesn't sound like a lot. But as we grow, as tourism grows, then obviously job creation within us. And this is just mainstream. There's also downstream job creation as well. So you can see the migration from just over 300 in 2001 to 900 in 2011. And you know, as long as we can continue growing, we continue employing, and we're certainly a proud participant in the economy in terms of job creation. Then challenges facing the aviation sector. You know, typically, we've got these very high input costs, and where we're trying to keep a lid on inflation generally in the economy. I'm not here to have a dip at Axon, not by any means, and that's the reason why I've also included, you know, other input cost contributors. When CPI is running at 5% exactly, it's very difficult to ask the consumer to pay his share of a 70% radical cost increase related to the airport infrastructure. Yes, there's part of it that should have already been taken from April this year, but even then, if you apportion it, it's out of kilter with what we as responsible South Africans are trying to achieve in making South Africa an affordable destination for tourism. The same thing with the SACAA. We've just recently seen a 50% tariff increase being gazetted by the state for the SACAA. That's one of the impediments. Another impediment is inefficiencies as regards infrastructure. And I've spoken about Mthatha, I've spoken about the Polokwane ILS. These are huge problems, and I can give you real live examples on Sunday afternoon. I think it's very significant that Mthatha gets itself organized very soon, because I think tourism or visitations at least to Mthatha are likely to increase in the not too distant future. Hopefully it's further down the track, but we need Mthatha to be a competent and efficient destination. From a navigation perspective, we need to be able to navigate. Airlink has donated the solution to Mthatha, but we need that certificated, and it's just bogged down in a system that seems to not understand the urgency when you've got flights diverting because you've got beacons that are not working. You've got to put an urgent solution in place, and it seems there is no urgency when it comes to the certification of navigation processes and procedures. Same thing with Polokwane. You asked, Chair, where the logjam is. Is it the SANDF? Yes, there is an airspace issue, but they don't use that airspace all the time. Is it the FACAA? Yes, because they sit on the National Airspace Committee. And it's there that this has taken over 4 years. We tried desperately to get the Polokwane ILS to be functional for SOCA 2010. In the end, it wasn't. Fortunately, we didn't have any poor weather, but we have poor weather all the time. We've had poor weather there in the last 2 days. The early morning flight, 9 out of 10 at the moment, is diverting back to Johannesburg. And then what do? Put all those passengers on a later flight. Great costs and inconvenience, not only to the airline, but also to the passenger, because they look at it and say, well, you know, what's wrong with Polokwane? Why is it that we're always diverting from Polokwane? And they blame the airline. In the meantime, it's not the airline, it's the infrastructure. And it's a simple process. Within 1 week, that solution can be put in place by the SACAA. If they can just resolve the airspace issues between NASCOM and the Air Force. And the Air Force, you know, I mean, we're not a country at war with anybody. Yes, we need to train, and the Air Force needs its space, and it needs to go and train in that space. But there can be a coexistence of airspace use. We can share that airspace. So when we've got an instrument approach, and it's not the approach into Polokwane, it's what happens in the event of a diversion. So if you get down to the minimum and you still can't see the ground, then there would be what you call a go-around, and we're just not making any progress. And that same logjam applies to unlock potential opportunities such as Grand Central, which I've spoken about. And Grand Central could alleviate a lot of the congestion at our Tambo. Grand Central exists as an airport. It is on the freeway system. It is on the Gautrain. It is central to Gauteng's catchment. And it would be an opportunity, not just for any scheduled air service provider to operate out of, but it needs an instrument approach, such as the GNSS approach, which is Global Positioning System, and that needs to be addressed. Then, and I don't want to belabor too much on this, there is allocation of tourism development budget to synthesize competition, to stimulate competition. And we feel that is not an appropriate deployment of tourism development funds. We would far rather see tourism development funds going into infrastructure on an equalized basis. Infrastructure like the development of a place like Lephalale, which doesn't have an airport infrastructure capable of accepting scheduled air services, like Fission, a huge focal point of mining development in the Northern Cape. And it's taking non-scheduled operations, yes, but there could be scheduled operations going to both of those destinations rather than seeing through the budget being put into subsidizing one competitor rather than being offered equally to all participants on those specific markets where it has been applied to. And when I talk fish and Lepalali, I also talk about the Plettenberg Bay airfield. That needs to be developed, and the Plettenberg Bay District Council on its own doesn't have enough wherewithal funds in particular on its own. But that is an important gem in the crown of the Garden Route tourism destination, and it could be developed in the same way Margate can as well. And in each of these instances where you have tourism development like this, it obviously also stimulates job creation. Then another impediment is, you know, we have this globally recognized brand called the Kruger National Park, and all South African national parks generally. We have two key points which can provide services to the parks, and both of them are being underexplored. One of them is not being explored at all in the form of Sikhuza. Sikhuza Airport was closed approximately 10 years ago. It was closed by way of some agreement between it and the KMIA Airport, Kruger Mpumalanga Airport. And we don't understand, we find such closure as being detrimental to the development of tourism, especially if one has to look at the locality of Sikhuza, which is in the heartland not only of the Kruger Park per se, but also of a whole lot of upmarket private game reserves, which themselves attract international tourism. And those destinations, it's difficult to get to them. One wants to make it a lot easier to get to them, and Sikhuza is located in such a place. I've put a graph together just to put into perspective costs of AXA airports and other airports, for example, KMIA. This is the top 55 most expensive airports on Earth, and there are hundreds and thousands of airports on Earth. And if you take a look at immediately to the left-hand side of the graph, you'll see there's a yellow bar. That yellow bar is KMIA for international charges. It ranks the sixth most expensive airport on Earth for its international charges. That's outrageous. How can we be charging such a lot if we're trying to attract tourism? The green bar next to it is the AXA tariff. That's the eighth most expensive airports on Earth. And then the yellow bar is the KMIA for regional. It's also expensive. None of our airports should be in the top 50 airports, most expensive airports on Earth, not relative to where we have our scheduled air service airfares as being less than one-third of what happens elsewhere on Earth. I spoke about Phalaborwa Airport, and I'd like to just talk very quickly about Phalaborwa Airport. Phalaborwa Airport is probably the best airport in proximity to the central and northern parts of the Kruger Park. Kruger Park is not developed in the central and northern parts, and more specifically, the infrastructure that's there, the hotels that are there, the accommodation that belongs to the state is underutilized because of less activity, less visitation, because of less accessibility. Yes, Phalaborwa Airport. By the way, Airlink owns Phalaborwa Airport. Airlink should not own airports. We're not in the airport ownership business. We're in the air transportation business. We bought it because many years ago it used to belong to the mine, and the mine in Phalaborwa wasn't really interested in developing it from a tourism perspective. So we picked it up and we've developed it from a tourism perspective, but we have limited means in developing that airport to its true potential. That airport should be owned by a local or a provincial government, and it should be developed further so that there can be better accessibility to the central and northern parts of the park, so that any airline can operate. And by the way, any airline can at the moment. We don't have an exclusive right, even though we own the airport. Any airline can operate larger aircraft in and out of Phalaborwa so that they can address the tourism potential of places like Letaba, Olifants, Mopani Lodge, which is the biggest camp in the park, Shingwezi, and it opens up opportunity for lots of those private concessions that seem to have been very successful around the southern parts of the park. The airport remains underutilized. The reason being that the runway is limited. There's enough land available to extend the runway, but we don't have the budget nor the inclination to invest in an asset that is not core to our business. And it needs somewhere between, let's say, 15 million rand to upgrade the runway. And, you know, we think that that money should be invested by someone who rightly should own that rather than ELEC. We are in dialogue with Bapalabola Municipality, and they are doing a study in terms of them investing in the airport, taking it over from us and investing further. But that is a typical deployment of tourism development budget the way we see it. Just for reference, it's not your ordinary airport. It is extraordinary, and it does represent itself as an icon not only to Palaboa, but also in terms of being a tourism attraction, a destination where people know that they have arrived to go on a Kruger Park visitation. Skukuza, I've spoken about that as well. Scheduled air services are prohibited because of that that restrictive agreement that exists. That agreement has got to be declared null and void, in our opinion, and that will unlock tourism potential to Skukuza. At the moment, there are about, on a daily basis, 5 to 10 small-gauge aircraft operating charter services in and out of Skukuza. That should be consolidated. It represents a lesser impact to the environment to operate one larger aircraft rather than as many smaller aircraft in there all day long, and the international tourism would feel a lot more comfortable flying in that that larger aircraft as well. There is a big event that is going to be hosted in Skukuza in 2013. It's being planned for at the moment, and at the moment Airlink is in dialogue with the local municipality to provide air access to Skukuza, but on a non-scheduled basis, which is crazy. We should be offering scheduled air services, not just us, Express and anybody else, offering scheduled air services in and out of Skukuza. And the reason why we talk about Skukuza and Palaboa, if you have a look at those blue dots on the graph, those are all private lodges, exclusive upmarket private lodges within the Sabi Sands Reserve. And then you've got Skukuza just immediately below it, and Skukuza, as we know, is a big commercial center within the Kruger Park. And to the north, obviously, you've got Palaboa as well, and the whole of the Kruger Park, as I say, is the best tourism brand in the world at the moment. And it is completely underexplored, and it should be not only in terms of the upliftment of its local communities, but also for South Africa PDY Limited, generally speaking. Chairman and your committee, again, thank you for having us here today. We really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. I'm sure that there are going to be lots of questions, so between Nolly and I, we will do our best to address your questions.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the very, very good presentation and comprehensive one at that, and but at the same time giving a very clear picture of where you are and what you want to be done. And I was impressed by that the Skukuza aesthetic sort of it just blends with the environment of a national park.
That's
kind of boring. It looks like a hill, and then all of a sudden, this is a building, and it's so beautiful.
Palaboa.
Oh, no, that is no color, just blends in nicely with natural colors. And material as well. It's over to you, Mr. Grumbach.
I'm much more encouraged now, Chair.
Okay.
I've been traveling on Airlink for the better part of 25 years, but I have no idea they were extensive and as successful as we've seen. I must say it was a fascinating and very enlightening presentation, so thank you very much. It's certainly one of the best we've had in this committee. I've just got two questions, quite different. Because I live in Maritzburg, or Mzunduzi, as I should refer it to, I travel to between Oribe Airport, the newly upgraded Oribe Airport, to Johannesburg fairly often. Up until recently, I would have disputed that the flights arrive on time because many of those flights get diverted to Durban because of the mist. There's also temperature changes which sometimes cause problems. And we've had a lot of issues with those turboprops. So it was a very frustrating flight to take, and people who travel regularly never take that flight. It is a meeting they can't miss because there's a high probability that it would be missed. However, since you brought in your jet airplanes, it seems to have gone a lot better. And I was wondering, is it the fact that you have the four-engine jets now traveling between Oraibi and ORT that have made that flight very much more reliable, or is it something else? I'm just intrigued to find out why it's improved so much. And the second thing is, I'm sure that the rest of the committee would agree with me. I'm absolutely horrified to hear about the situation having Polokwane. I mean, you mentioned the figure of 90% of the morning flights being diverted. So at the moment, Java, and that, you know, even half of that would be a very, very unacceptable situation. And I wondered whether, I mean, I'm now exceeding my authority as the opposition member on this committee, but through the chair, and I hope I have his attention. Should you not be giving us an email that can be circulated to this committee, just exactly what your problems are, and we can try and assist, because it can't be good for tourism. Never mind South Africa, that you have such a problem simply to get government departments to talk to each other. And chair, through you, I mean, surely we can assist in at least getting this problem out and, I mean, sorted, and then, you know, we've done something useful for the industry and for our country.
It's mainly around the fight between air authorities, more so rather than the navigation instruments, really.
Chair, that the instrument landing system belongs to the airport, but its certification goes about airspace, and the certification authority ultimately is the Civil Aviation Authority, but air traffic navigation services also have a role to play, and the airport has a role to play. So it's the diverse and diverging interests rather than converging interests, and I think that's what we've got to try and achieve. We're not getting onto the same page. We should be on the page of tourism, because that's what's going to ultimately uplift job creation, and we're not prioritizing it. We're prioritizing each with their own private agenda, and that's not going to achieve anything. But I welcome that opportunity, and I will send you, Chair, an email giving you the details, and if there is anything that this forum can do to assist in that regard, we would highly value that.
Okay, no, we'll keep asking questions to the relevant ministers. Mama Jo.
Yeah, thank you. I think exactly on the point. I think the presentation does show that I think there is a need for quite a lot of follow-up, either by ourselves or a follow-up in terms of departments, you know, talking to each other. For example, the question of the airports that have been closed, I'm thinking of the Department of Transport, Department of Public Works, but you are not telling us exactly what efforts you yourselves are making to ensure that this happens, but obviously, it seems to me there is a lot that needs to be done in order to improve the situation. It's not just your problem, but it is a problem of coordination by the various structures and by the various departments. I think including what we refer to as the allocation of the tourism development budget, you see, I think that also needs to be looked into. As you say, it rather encourages competition rather than creating, you know, opportunities, equal opportunities. So, I mean, what is being done about that? Obviously, this another question would be, what role can the committee play in ensuring that, you know, some of these programs are ironed out? But with regard to airports that are there but are not functioning, you remind me of that airport is in what used to be the former Ciskei, still the Ciskei anyway, but not your country now, Bulembu. There's a beautiful airport there, you know. It's there and it's good, it looks good, but it's not being used. And yet, it is so, not difficult, but it is so time consuming. I should imagine more for business people. You have to be driving, you know, say from Mpata all the way when they want to get to East London. You spend some 8 hours or so on the road, and yet if there were some links, you know, between those areas, the Transkei and the Sea-Sky, I'm sure it would make it easier. But it's very sad to see such a beautiful asset not being used at all. And of course, obviously, because time is going to deteriorate. It is already deteriorating, asset. And, Ulembu, can you add it to the list to see all those efforts that need to be looked into? And also, in terms of the new destinations, I spoke earlier about Mafikeng and how, you know, the absence of an airport in that area is actually, you know, discouraging the development of tourism. And as I said, everybody there, in all areas, all the municipalities we went to, they all raised this point about the need of an airport in Mafikeng. Thank you, Sir.
Chairperson, it is just a pity that the adding people might not have guards to see to it that this Kukuza airport is reopened. You can imagine when you are going to Kukuza, you use Kruger, which is now Freight Airport. From there, you will drive, I'm telling you, close to 2 hours, running like mad. And when you listen to the Sanparks people presenting, the language is just tourism and nothing else. You know, the Kruger National Park people. But now, how do you get there? It's frustrating. Can you imagine? Nelspruit Airport to Skogoza, it's a joke. So, Chairperson, we have said a mouthful that we shall keep on saying something, questioning, sending questions to the relevant ministers who are running the relevant departments. It's frustrating because Parliament is using Nelspruit, not Phalaborwa. You see now? Why was the airport Skukuza closed? Maybe I didn't hear you very well, the reasons. Why was that airport closed? Because it was so efficient for the people who are visiting the Kruger National Park.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for a beautiful presentation. We have managed to begin to understand what, who SAA Link is. Having said that, understanding that SAA Link is a private company, and SAA only had 3% shareholding in Air Link, I want to find out that in the 70% that they seem to hold, do they have any BEE partners? Number two, in terms of traffic volumes, they are talking about, have they considered it? To me, they have referred to almost all the destinations. How profitable and how good and so on they are. But we are interested in noting, in wanting to find out what pertains in the Mthatha, ORT Mthatha route. we have got, you seem to be setting up airlines or routes where there is a possible attraction. Others have got oil, others have got this and that. But Port St. John's has got, instead the Eastern Cape has a pristine coastline. But there is no reliability in Airlink going to that area in Mthatha. Tourism is always suffering from the irregularities of operation that area suffers from. Sometimes due to, it's due to bad weather and the other problems that the presenter has given us this morning. In Mthatha, there is no consideration of the fact that destination is very, very expensive with the amount of fares that are charged in between ORT and UTT. You find that you could go to London from Joburg with that flight. The fares are really very highly priced. The lady said, without a destination, one cannot exist. You cannot exist. We have got a destination. You exist, but you do not render good service in Mthatha. I hear that in Mpumalanga, when your flights have to be diverted, you take responsibility. But you don't take responsibility for passengers that you divert from ORT to East London, which were meant to go to Mthatha. You don't. And there is a very bad attitude about it as well, the way you handle it. Because those passengers, in fact, it amounts to them being hijacked by yourself from Johannesburg, and you divert their airline to East London, you hold them hostage in East London because you don't provide any other route. You dump those passengers in East London without any recourse, and nobody wants to account for anything. If the passengers go back to Joburg, you say they must pay for their bed and they must find their own airline going back to Mthatha because it's none of your baby. Then, I believe, then you are deterring tourism. You are deterring tourism. I understand you are running a business, but there is the human element and the responsibility that you've got to take for a passenger that has paid a fare. You cannot take a passenger from Joburg and dump that passenger in East London. They don't know where to go to in East London. So you need to take care of those passengers. Now, tourism in the Eastern Cape will only succeed if one drops off or disembarks from East London, but never in Mthatha. As a result, you don't find tourists coming to the Eastern Cape through Mthatha because of the unreliability of Airlink. So please do take care of that. We would like to promote tourism in that area, but there is nothing we can do if we are not sure of an aircraft. And right now they are at an advanced stage about the upgrading of the airport, about quite a number of things, including the airline machinery, I don't know what it is called, and the radar and things like that. There is a talk of improvement on that. And of course, the fault also lies with the people who are supposed to be providing that kind of equipment and making the airport to be a viable airport. Then aircraft will land. I do appreciate that the government too has got a responsibility to upgrade that airport and make it efficient. But sometimes It gives us a lot of questioning. It makes us question quite a lot. If Madiba's jet can land, it's a huge aircraft. It lands there without a problem. A lot of VIPs come there having, taken their own jets to land in Lumtapa. But you find that Air Link cannot land, and we just cannot conceptualize why. Maybe some special things are hoisted when Madiba is coming, I don't know. But it makes us question that quite a lot. Anyway, so far, about your friend. Coming back to friend. You seem, without creating an affront to your business sense, I noticed you have dedicated attention to your freighter aircraft, and definitely for business growth. Is it not perhaps to the detriment or the lowering of your passenger business? It is just a personal interest. Thank you.
Oh, my time is up. So, just briefly a response, and then before, because it's 1 o'clock, we've got to.
Yes.
Time flies. Temple Fuji. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the committee for all the questions. I'm going to try and be brief in answering them. I think the first one was raised by, I think I got the name of it, Mr. Grimble. Okay. On the Mr. Ndruzi Horobi, I think it's nowadays called Peter Maritzburg Airport, and the frequent diversions in the history book. And it goes about a very complicated non-directional beacon instrument landing approach system, where the aircraft had to turn 90 degrees, almost right angles, off its final approach at its fix onto the runway. And this, unfortunately, is an unreliable maneuver when you are sitting with low cloud. And obviously it's not dangerous because you're above the ground, but it's unreliable in terms of where you turn on the beacon onto the final approach. And the consequence of that is that when there was low cloud in Pietermaritzburg, often there were diversions. And the diversions, when the old Durban International Airport was located where it is, were almost manageable. But since it moved to the location where Kinshasa is, it's far less manageable because it's much more of a drive for those people that live in the Sunduzi area. Now, in your presentation packs, there is an article which featured in our in-flight magazine, but it's also featured in international air transportation publications. It's about GNSS approach. And for 2 years prior to July last year, Airlink worked on pioneering the GNSS approach for Pietermaritzburg. We also pioneered it at Maseru and Lesotho. That was the first place that we put it in terms of a real operation, but we put that system in place at Oraibi Airport, Pietermaritzburg Airport, in conjunction with augmented landing lights and runway lights for identification when you're flying in low cloud and fog. And that has been operational since July. It doesn't mean we're never going to get diverted, because sometimes when you get down to your minimum decision altitude, you still have to unfortunately divert onto Durban because you still can't see the ground. And you have to be able to see the ground to land at Pietermaritzburg. It's not like, our Tambo or Cape Town, where you can have a full auto landing, provide your aircraft is capable of doing an auto landing. You can't have that at Pietermaritzburg because it's an undulating surface. It rises and it's dangerous to do an auto land. You have to do a manual visual landing ultimately. Now, what we have achieved is we've lowered the decision altitude down from 800 feet to 300 feet. And we're very pleased at the reliability that we're achieving since it's been lowered since July last year. So for the last 12 months, I think I can count the diversions on less than one hand. I think there have been about three, possibly four diversions in the last 12 months, whereas previously we could have three or four in a week.
Yeah.
So that's typically what we've had. So we've been able to achieve reliability there. Now, I think we've dealt with the second question, which was the Polokwane, and that is I will send a note through to your committee, if you don't mind, Chairman, through you, and just detail some of the challenges that exist and for how long they have existed, so we'll give you that information. Then the point I was trying to make about the allocation of tourism development budget, in one province, and I don't want to be specific about it, tourism development budget has found its way through its authority into the hands of a competitor by way of a subsidy, without going out to offer it publicly to all competitors equally. So only one competitor has got right to that subsidy, and in our view that is completely inequitous. It's wrong. It should have gone out through some public process of sorts. And what we're saying is, rather than allocating tourism development budget to one competitor to synthesize the competition, we're saying, rather than develop a destination, put it into the infrastructure at a Lepalali, or into a Sishen, or into a Plettenberg Bay, or a Margate, or wherever. Rather, put it into the infrastructure and then open that to every participant, rather than trying to stimulate competition artificially, which doesn't really work. All you're doing really is creating an imbalance in the market temporarily. Ultimately, when the subsidy dries up, the balance will be returned. Then the question relating to Bulembo Airport in Vishu. Now, unfortunately, Vishu Airport is very close to East London Airport. And East London Airport has got a high intensivity of air travel already. There are lots of scheduled air services providing services to East London. And because of its close proximity, I think it's less than 50 kilometers away, so it's less than the distance between Johannesburg and Pretoria away. That is the challenge. It's a beautiful infrastructure. It's got a lovely runway. It's got lovely terminal buildings. And it has an instrument landing system. But the problem is, how do you take from the commerciality of East London 50 kilometers away and relocate that commerciality to a place so close to East London? And that's always been the challenge on Vishu. Then... I know it's closer, Chair, from Bulembo to Mthatha, but the challenge is, how do you get the flights to go to Bulembo in the first place when you've got such a lot of flight options going in and out of East London? Now, related to the question was, what about an airport? Do you need an airport for the northwest? Now, there are two airports in the northwest. There's an airport at Mafeking. It's Mabatu. It's a beautiful airport infrastructure. In fact, it can take international diversions as long as they keep the fire services, emergency services at a certain standard. And it has had international diversions previously. There was a Lufthansa aircraft that went into Mafeking. Unfortunately, they had to take down the light poles because the wings were too long and they forgot about that in the planning. But if that happened, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or 8 years ago, something like that. Airlink used to provide a service to Mabatu, to Mafeking. We used to. Now, and we used to do it with a provincial subsidy, and it went out to provincial tender. The problem was that to get civil servants to make use of the air service rather than to drive was at odds with the motor vehicle policy. And I think the provincial government had a great difficulty in getting civil servants to ignore the motor vehicle policy and make use of the air services. And they got to a point in time where the provincial government said, unless the services can continue in a self-sustaining way, we can't carry on subsidizing it. And there, the catalyst towards it stopping was that there wasn't continuity of the support that came through from civil servants needing to travel between Mafeking and Gauteng, call it. So that's really what was the demise of that. And it's unfortunate, but, I mean, there is an airport, and if everybody supported the air service, then I think the air service could be viable. But the main traffic that goes to Mafeking is, in fact, Northwest Provincial Government-related traffic, their consultants and all the civil servants that are employed there. On the Skukuza issue, perhaps again, Chairman, you know, the real answer to that is, let me give you a background note so that you can understand more fully why Skukuza was closed almost 10 years ago, because Skukuza used to have viable scheduled air services in and out of Skukuza. It goes about the development of KMIA when it was developed approximately 10 years ago. And there was an agreement, and we challenged that agreement. In fact, we believe that the agreement itself is anti-competitive. So we've challenged that. There is, in fact, a matter that has been challenged at the moment. We have also been in dialogue with Sandparks, with Dr. David Mabunda and his team, and we have encouraged them to open Skukuza again. And from their perspective, they would like Skukuza open because they see that as a gateway to tourism to the Kruger National Park, central and southern parts of the, or at least the southern parts of the Kruger Park. We think that it which stands and which is the reason why they haven't been able to open it, that agreement probably is doesn't stand up in law. And certainly not in terms of the Competition Act, but that's our view. Then the question that was raised about LA shareholding and who the shareholders are and what the company has done historically about Black Economic Empowerment Partners. Firstly, our chairman is a gentleman by the name of Peter Paul Nguyen. He is with Bacana Trust, and he has for quite some time now been trying to invest in the company. One of the challenges about the airline business is that it is regarded by the financial fraternity as being high risk, and they don't typically have an appetite to invest in it. So it has to have a different level of investor, in other words, someone who comes with cash rather than goes into borrowings to invest. And Peter Paul is the head of a consortium, and there are many people. I wouldn't say it's as broad-based as we would like it to be, but there is a group of individuals that we have been trying to encourage as shareholders to participate in the business for quite some time. There is a new opportunity right now for some shareholding restructuring, because one of the shareholders, which no longer has active South African interest, wishes to exit, as well as my business partner for a long time, Barry Webb, who has retired 3 years ago. He is also wanting to fully retire and exit as well. So there are opportunities, and we are exploring those opportunities together with banks, including Investec Bank, is one of the banks that they have approached. As I say, it's not an easy exercise because guarantees are required from the other shareholders, and those guarantees are quite difficult given the volatility of running an airline business and the very poor margins. And basically, the guarantees go about somebody has to guarantee the dividends of the company. We haven't had dividends for the last 4 years. Nobody is prepared to underwrite a dividend. Then the under-exploration of Umtata, we agree that Umtata is a destination that punches below its weight significantly. We explain the unreliability of Umtata as a destination specifically to do with the unreliability of the navigation aids at Umtata. What I mean by unreliability is we've had power unreliability, standby generator unreliability, but the beacons themselves are obsolete. They should have been replaced many years ago, and they have not been replaced. Now, the same GNSS instrument approach facility that we developed for Oribee, we've also developed for Umtata. And we've been, by the way, that development, the final development, the design, was submitted to the SACAA in December, 31st of December last year. They then required us to do flight trials. We did them with them on board, and you have to do that in visual meteorological conditions. We did that. That took place in March, and we still today have not had the instrument approach procedure for Umtata approved. That needs to be expedited. For obvious reasons, it needs to be expedited because, you know, contrary to the belief that the state president's jet can land when there is cloud but airlink can't, that is not correct. When the state president's aircraft, or when Madiba was flown down there with the Air Force, the weather was such that they could land irregardless of the beacons, or coincidentally the beacons may have been working on that day. But the beacons don't always work. For example, Sunday afternoon when we went in, there was low cloud, the beacons were not working. What do we do? You unfortunately have no choice but to divert. And then let me deal with a question that was raised about diversions to East London. Our policy is quite specific, and that is that if there is a diversion to East London, we refuel the aircraft and the passengers can go back to Johannesburg and then they can get on the next available flight. No airline, certainly not Airlink, and this is IATA, the International Air Travel Association rule, which we follow, we're a member of IATA. No airline stands accountable for weather-related diversions. So if there's a weather problem, the passenger has the choice to either get off at East London and find their way to Umtata in the circumstances, or fly back to Johannesburg and get on the next available flight down to Umtata, and we will accommodate them on the next available flight. But we, at our expense, absolutely, that is the policy. So you go back to Johannesburg, and on the next available flight, we will accommodate that passenger. So, and the passenger is not expected to pay again under any circumstances. So, and that applies equally to Polokwane or to any of our destinations. We have regular Polokwane diversions at the moment. Passenger comes back to Johannesburg and we accommodate the passenger on the next available flight.
Thank you.
Yes, the fares in the relative context of Mthatha are expensive, and one of the reasons why is it's a thin route, and very often you have passengers going to Mthatha and very few passengers coming back. So there is what we call a bi-directional bias. So from Johannesburg you have a load, coming back you don't, or coming back you have a load, going down you don't. So it's a thin route. The average load factors on that route are not that great. But you know, generally we try and find a balance between the customer's interests and the airline's interests. Clearly we have to make ends meet, balancing revenue with costs, and we do. And it's not an inexpensive route to operate, specifically having regard for the high number of diversions we have. We believe that the GNSS approach, as it's worked in the case of Pietermaritzburg, can also work in the case of Mthatha. And Mthatha doesn't lend itself to sophisticated navigation aids that are land-based, for example, an instrument landing system. That cannot apply to Mthatha because of terrain, unfortunately. Mthatha doesn't only need an instrument landing system. There is going to be a requirement for a lot of passenger movement at Mthatha at some point in time, and we have a solution where we can offer a larger gauge aircraft. The Avro can operate to Mthatha, so if the need is there, we can operate that aircraft. But ideally, together with the terminal building upgrades at Mthatha, Mthatha also needs runway lengthening. And I know that there is an initiative underway at the moment to spend some budget to upgrade the runway, to widen it. It needs to be at least 25 meters wide, and it needs to be lengthened as well. Preferably, it should be 50 meters wide, and it should be 2 kilometers long, and it's far from that at the moment. Then, as regards freight, perhaps I didn't explain adequately. We're not looking at focusing more effort on freight and less effort on the passenger business. We expect to be taking passenger aircraft and converting them to freighters, but replacing the passenger aircraft with better passenger aircraft. So if I had to go back to the slide that deals with aircraft, this aircraft will be the replacement aircraft. This aircraft will be converted into a freighter aircraft. So this is the cargo aircraft. There are 13 of these at the moment, and all of those 13 will become freighters within the next 2 to 3 years because we see the demand for freight exists like that. But as these aircraft get converted, this aircraft will be the replacement aircraft. So within 2 to 3 years from now, Air Link should be an all-jet airline operator, all-jet aircraft operator. Chair, I hope I've answered all the questions, and again, I'd like to say thank you very much indeed for having us here today.
Chair, another question, but just the presentation, are we going to get a copy of that?
I'm
happy to take questions, Chair. I don't have a time constraint.
It's not a question, Chair. Are we going to get a copy of this presentation? Because it's too much to write down.
Do we have copies of this?
Well, Chair, maybe I can just explain it. I wasn't aware of the format. This is the first time I've appeared here, so please forgive me for not having come with hard copies. I think between Nonnie and I, we messed up a bit in that regard. I apologize for that. What we'll do is we'll leave Jerry with a copy on a disc, or we'll in fact save this copy on Jerry's computer, and then Jerry can circulate it. It is quite a large file, unfortunately, so if you've got discs, sticky drives or a little flash disk, I think that would be the easiest way to download it because it's 9 megabytes quick, the presentation.
Yes, ma'am.
No, Chairperson, I was going to ask if they would not be interested in connecting Tata to Cape Town on some days, on alternate days, because there's so much traffic between, from Tata to Cape Town, especially on Thursdays and Fridays.
Chair, I think what we'd like to do is, we've had that request before, we'd like to study that and understand exactly who is that traffic, who are those prospective customers. So we'll do a research. Nonnie will in fact do that research. So if there's anything that you can help us with in guiding us to who the potential customers are likely to be, we would welcome that. Because if there is a tourism need to operate a route like that, we will very gladly operate it. And the same applies, by the way, to 20 City, Pretoria. You know, there seems to be a need at 20, and we've been approached, and we're going to investigate that as well in due course.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Improve your hospitality between Helbert and
I think serving been to also to another destination like the Val. Do you go to the Val around Ferienes and those places? Because it looks like there is quite an attraction there, an attraction that is not very well advertised. We had just been exposed to it because we had gone for oversight to Houten. But I'm not saying that you should go there. But perhaps it would be worth it looking at it as part of your considerations, given the fact that you said that your marketing is destination specific and short lived, which seems to be the new approach in tourism as well. Those who are from SA Tourism. The domestic market is greatly gaining momentum, is getting promoted as well, and the people of South Africa are emerging more so as part of the picture rather than the Big Five, which became the Big Seven. So now it will be the Big Seven together with people. And then as that emerges, culture, heritage and those types of things will influence the way destinations are perceived. The issue of the big bacons have been noted. The issue of navigation, which is part of bacons, has been noted. The cost impact on labor and the cost of capital. They would include it and check, but there's nothing we can do about that as a committee as well, because if the our specialized labor is in demand globally, there's no way of influencing price as South Africans. The same applies if our interest rate in the Reserve Bank is what it is, and then you find that in America it's 1%, in Europe it's 1%. There's no way you can influence the cost of capital in South Africa, except if perhaps it is subsidized one way or the other. The question of admin tariffs and taxes from the civil aviation CAA, I think that needs attention from committee members. I think there could be questions to the relevant authorities. And then the question of Umtata, I do not know whether the municipality can assist there to pay for the system, the navigation system, but I don't know, or the province or whomever. The authorities agreeing. The issue of the expenses at the airports, that our airports are expensive. But I do not know, is it because of the cost in South Africa, or is it because of a lack of competition, or is it because they are not private, the type of thing. I don't know why they are expensive. I think that would assist if we knew why the airports in South Africa are expensive. The Palabura that needs upgrade. There's the issue of the diversions in Polokwane. Because of the airspace related distinct conflicts, I think that one, once perhaps it is being taken by you, will also have to be taken by interacting with the minister to influence the situation with the Minister of Transport and see whether perhaps aviation for the sake of tourism can benefit. The issue of Mafeking as a destination, I do not know really, because what we heard when we were going for the oversight tour to the northwest was that because that capital is mainly a civil servant distinct business area, what happens is that a lot of people use their cars going to Johannesburg because their planes that they get from they'll be paid, and as a result they do not use flights. Also because of the distances to Johannesburg, they are not too much for a person to drive within one day. So it is those considerations. About boosting that place as a destination, I do not know. It will take much more than what this committee can handle. But first, let us have your concluding remarks. But thank you very much, Mr. Foster and Ms. Ashika.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks again to the committee. I'd just like to just give one more remark, if I may, and it's not a new item. It's something that you said and that I just picked up on, and this goes about investment in tourism, and you spoke about customer equity, and it's something that we're very big on in Air Link. In fact, there has been a massive shift in focus between brand equity and marketing Air Link as a brand, and recognizing who our customers are. And that applies equally to all. And you'll notice that if you go to check-in counters at O.R. Tambo, there is generally a very different approach. But it goes beyond that. It goes about complaints and how they get dealt with. It goes about the visitations of the top chief executives of all of our companies, who we do business with to most of our destinations, including Tetum and Dola and wherever. It goes about understanding who our customers are, and making sure that they have every good reason to fly with us again, whether they are international tourists coming to our parks or whether they are consultants going to a coking coal mine in Tet or a copper mine in Ndola. We understand who they are, and we make sure that they have every good reason to fly with Air Link as opposed to a competitor, and that they have very good reasons to come back into the country. And again, Chairman, I say thank you for having us. It's been a great privilege to be here today, and I think both of us have really enjoyed being with you and your committee. Thank you.
You know, definitely it will take us all working together to perform optimally. Thank you very much. Let us adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you.